Welcome and good evening. We'll call our regular city council session to order. We just came back from a closed session. I'll ask our city attorney if there's anything to report.
There's nothing to report.
Very good. Beginning our regular session, well, I'll ask you all to join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you. Roll call, please. M. Moreno, roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Next item, presentations. And it's always an honor to make some recognition of our employees. Our city manager will do that. Rochelle?
That better?
There we go. If I can have the employees that are being recognized come on up. So Dean and Andrew, Aaron, Annette, Corporal Taylor, Captain Hallett. So this is Andrew Luera, and he is a fire engineer, paramedic, and hazmat specialist, and he's been with the city for 5 years. Andrew was first hired as a seasonal firefighter back in 2006. We don't count the time, unfortunately. Come stand here. count the time as a part-timer until he's hired full-time. And he was hired as a full-time firefighter in 2010. As a full-time firefighter paramedic in 2010. He was promoted to the fire engineer paramedic hazardous materials specialist in 2014. Andrew is a key member of the fire department who also oversees the reserve firefighter program and their training requirements. He is a member of the SLO regional hazmat team and is a leader on several hazmat leader in training and is responsible for administering the department's probationary manual and tests to new firefighters. Andrew created and manages the department's customer satisfaction and quality assurance program. He also reviews all emergency responses and tallies every customer service feedback. Andrew and his wife live in Atascadero. They have a daughter and another child on the way. So congratulations, Andrew, and thank you for your service. Thank you. Andrew truly wears a lot of hats here in the city. He's a man that we see around a lot and is always here responding and helping out where we can. So thank you, Andrew. Next is another fire personnel, Dean Parasek, our newest captain. Dean was originally hired as a reserve firefighter for the city back in 2002, and then as a seasonal firefighter in 2003. He became a full-time firefighter paramedic in July of 2005, so he's been with us 10 years. And he was promoted to engineer paramedic in 2010, and then was again promoted to fire captain paramedic earlier this year. As our newest fire captain, Dean supervises a station and engine company crew of 3 to 5 personnel daily. Dean is a paramedic field training officer, which means that he trains and qualifies several new paramedics each year after they completed their classroom and clinical training. He also has a daunting workload ahead of him in order to complete his Atascadero Fire Captain's task book and to demonstrate proficiency as a fire captain during the upcoming months. We know you're going to get through that just fantastically. We have complete confidence that it'll be successful. Dean is a proven and tested leader in all departmental IT, CAD systems, and mobile data computers, computer fire reporting system, and database management. Dean and his wife also live here in town and have twin boys, so thank you for your service and congratulations. Thank you, Dean. Corporal Taylor. This is your chance in the sun. We don't get to say thank you often enough, and we want to. So Corporal Taylor joined the Atascadero Police Department after originally starting his career with the Morro Bay Police Department. Prior to working in law enforcement, John worked as a manager at Long's Drugstore, where rumor has it that John was known to chase after shoplifters as they fled the store. Just rumor, huh?
Maybe.
So it seemed that law enforcement has always been in his blood. From the start of his employment with APD, John showed himself to be a very proactive police officer, and his leadership in the department has been clearly demonstrated. As a police corporal, John does a superb job of leading his shifts and setting a positive example. He is also responsible for new officer field training and has therefore trained quite a few of our current police officers. We want to make special note of John's very active involvement in the police canine program. He was a canine handler along with his partner, Ake, for 7 years. He is also well known in the community and has been a tremendous ambassador for the police department in that position. He and Ake successfully located many suspects in hiding, have been deployed in numerous incidents in locations of lots of illegal drugs. The two of them are responsible for getting quite a number of dangerous suspects off our streets and making Atascadero a safer community. As a result of his active involvement within the canine program, after Ake's retirement, John was asked to continue to act as a canine division supervisor, and he has acted with distinction in that capacity. And under his guidance and direction, the canine program was able to raise money for the purchase of the second new canine and equipment. I know John was very active in all of that fundraising. You didn't want to slow down near him because he'd hit you up somehow. That's a good thing. We now have two active police dogs in Atascadero in our canine program, and his ongoing success due in large part to John's efforts. In addition, John really enjoys being a daddy and a coach. He spends a lot of his personal time coaching and making sure his kids get to all of their sporting and other activities. Thank you, John, for your service to our community. Thank you. Aaron's next. So Aaron has been a dispatcher with the police department since September of 2006, but has been an employee of the city since 2005. She used to work in the community development department and was active down there with our building and permitting counter. Aaron is now one of our senior dispatchers and is extremely knowledgeable about the job duties and has become an effective dispatch trainer. Aaron also handles the complex tasks of records processing, and she is trained in crime scene investigation. She now assists our senior property and is able to thoroughly process most evidence on her own. Aaron has played a vital role in combating wildfires in the past few years during her active duty dispatch assignments to the United States Forest Service, working with several major fire incidents both around California and out of state. Aaron has also been very involved with the Atascadero Police Association and its fundraising efforts, and for several years she played an active role in the planning and preparation of the Atascadero Police Association charity golf tournament. She enjoyed playing softball and has actively coached softball at the local high school level. She also loves to scuba dive, and when she can squeeze some time into it, she likes to scuba dive when she can squeeze some time for it in her busy schedule. Another busy lady that's involved in everything. You see her around town, charity golf. I think she was busy with Explorers for a while, a lot of other things. So we have all of our employees wear a lot of different hats and doing a fantastic job, active both at the city and in the community, and it's amazing. Annette's another one. Annette has been with our community development department for 15 years. She's worked energetically and enthusiastically as the administrative assistant for the community development department for 15 years. She's a key member of our central reception staff, which provides the critical support for the city's building and planning operations. Annette ensures the planning commission and design review meetings are properly noticed to the public and that the agenda and staff reports are thorough and complete. She is instrumental in ensuring that planning staff gets their presentation reports submitted on time for those meetings. She attends the commission and DRC meetings and prepares accurate and succinct minutes for the meetings. Annette is always working to improve the planning department's service to the community. She's been a positive contribution to our ongoing efforts to provide quality customer service. Thank you, Annette. And she's another one that's very active in the community. I think you'll see her at almost every football game, Atascadero Greyhound football team, she and her husband both. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Scott was first hired as a reserve firefighter back in 1991, and then as a seasonal firefighter in 1992. He became a full-time firefighter and emergency medical technician in 1995. Scott was promoted to fire engineer in 1997 and again promoted to fire captain in 2003. Scott supervises the station and engine company crew of 3 to 5 personnel daily. In addition, Scott manages the city's fire safety council, fuel management and chipping programs. The programs abated over 4,000 tons of vegetation and has in fact been credited by members of the FireSafe Council as being the most efficiently run management program in the Tri-Counties area. That's big kudos. Thank you, Scott. Scott also manages the fire department's auto aid contracts and all of the state and federal billing for the fire department's contracted mutual aid responses. He oversees the contract negotiations and makes recommendations annually for the required changes. Scott is a true hometown native who still lives in Atascadero, is married, has 2 children, and is very involved in community activity and coaches just about every sport. I'd also like to mention that the 3 fire employees who are all scheduled to be here have logged over 90 days on fires this past fire season. So these guys have been extremely busy, and it's hard being out and away from home and family. It's hard on both the fire personnel and their families, and we can take this time to thank them all for their service this summer. I came to the Atascadero Police Department 20 years ago after starting his law enforcement career with the Monrovia Police Department. Since that time, Joe has proven himself to be not only an outstanding member of the department, but of the community as well. During his tenure with the Atascadero Police Department, Commander Allen has been thorough and was involved in a number of high-profile investigations as a lead supervisor. He's also been responsible for the training and mentoring of a large number of officers who have gone on to experience great success in their careers. Joe played an integral part in developing a tactical team for the department, and due in large part to his involvement, Atascadero PD plays an active role in the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Department SWAT team to this day. Joe was also a proactive officer and sergeant on patrol. He is widely known throughout the local criminal community, with many former arrestees still referring to him using both names. Joe Allen, it's all one word. Shortly after assuming office, Police Chief Haley selected Joe from a very well-qualified pool of applicants to fill the position of commander. The chief is very happy to report that this has been one of the best decisions he's made. Joe is an integral component of the decision-making process at the department several years now. I think both of my kids had you as coach at one point or another for different types of things for a number of years. That's another reason, one of the reasons that he's so widely known within the community. Joe is one of those people who's recognized just about everywhere he goes. Joe remains active as an ambassador for the department in many areas. He is an integral part of the Lighthouse Project, working to end drug abuse in our community. He routinely interacts with our Special Olympics and North County Adaptive Recreation athletes, playing bocce ball, basketball, and serving at the Tippecop dinner. Joe is a devoted husband to Teresa and father to his 3 children, AJ, Savannah, and Breezy. The Atascadero Police Department and the city of Atascadero are truly lucky to have him. Thank you, Joe, for everything you do. And if I could have all of the honorees up here, and we'll take a picture with council and have council come around if we could. I know, that's it, doesn't it?
Well, one evidence of the involvement of our police and for their support of our staff, too. They give up a lot of family time for both of these positions and all of our staff. We appreciate their work. Next item on our agenda is the North County Connection Recovery Month proclamation, which will be done by Roberta Fonzie, and receiving it will be our own Susan Warren to accept. And feel free to make a few comments after Roberta reads the proclamation.
Very good. I have a short proclamation for you, Sue, tonight, and this is proclaiming that September is National Recovery Month. Whereas behavioral health is essential to one's overall wellness, whereas on average more than 33,000 Americans died each year between 2001 and 2009 as a result of suicide, more than one person every 15 minutes. Whereas 2015 Recovery Month theme, Join the Voices of Recovery, Visible, Vocal, and Valuable, highlights our opportunities for recovery education, support, and celebration. This theme encourages communities to be visible by knowing the prevalence of mental and or substance abuse disorders. Now, therefore, the City Council of the City of Atascadero does hereby proclaim the month of September 2015 as National Recovery Month and call upon the people of Atascadero to observe this month with a renewed focus on being visible, vocal, and valuable to help meet current and future needs for treatment and recovery support services. Thank you, Sue.
Thank you very much, Councilmember Fonzie and the rest of the council. This has been a rewarding opportunity this month to go around and speak with various city councils and the Board of Supervisors this morning. And I want to thank you for reading this. We did have a few more things in this that I'd just like to bring a couple of more facts to the front here. And one is that the first behavioral health symptoms typically precede a mental and or substance use disorder by 2 to 4 years. And this offers a window of opportunity to intervene early and often. And that 2/3 of Americans believe that treatment and support can help people with mental illnesses lead normal lives. And this was to begin to really educate ourselves, like we said, about the signs and the symptoms. And one of the other pieces in here talked about the importance of peer support and the community in recognizing these signs and symptoms, intervening early, and then supporting that person that's having those issues, those problems, concerns, whether you're a family member, a neighbor, a friend, but beginning to build the trust with that person so that you can refer them early and often into services. This isn't something like that just gets fixed overnight. And rather than waiting like we would with a diabetic, why would we wait to treat them until we amputate their foot? No, we need to start very early on with the prevention and the treatment processes. And we really have an opportunity in these next 3 years to begin to make a difference, provide some services, and different types of services in this county so that we can really help people heal. And it's going to save us money. It'll save us money in law enforcement. It's going to save us money in the emergency rooms. It's going to save a lot of lives and create more stable families. And so I hope you can get behind us in this next year as we're out here trying to develop the services that are needed and do the providing these resources, but you can see we've got a big job ahead of us, but it'll pay off. It'll really pay off. Thank you.
Thank you. Sue, why don't you come up and we'll give this to you.
Tom, could I just make a comment about Sue and her North County connection? She does a fabulous job, not only in our community, but for the whole county. And I know sometimes people have reservations of having facilities like this in your neighborhood or what have you. Sue's been my neighbor for 15 years. Fortunately, she's 550 feet away from my house, so I'm able to vote on some of the things we do for the North County Connection. She's an excellent neighbor. So if you ever have the opportunity where people may want to put one of these facilities in your neighborhood or near your house, don't be afraid of them. She does a really good job, and there's really a need for that. So once again, thank you for the great job you do, and thank you for being a good neighbor.
Thank you, Sue, and thank you, Bob. Next item is a Fire Prevention Week proclamation, and this is near and dear to my heart as well, as reading an old Atascadero newspaper from 20, 30 years ago or so. My father, when he was a fireman, was one of the first working in fire prevention and worked with a lot of local businesses to get donations to get some of the programs in place. I'll never forget hearing some of the things we can do as citizens to have safer homes. I remember when the fire chief was talking about sprinkler systems, and well, I'll never forget him saying that there's never been a loss of life in a residence that's had sprinkler systems. That's an incredible statement if you look back at the history of fire prevention. Much of what we're going to be talking about tonight is one of the simplest things anyone can do is simply have a smoke alarm in your home and check the batteries every year. Amazing what a difference that does. We'll have our fire prevention officer and assistant chief, and I don't know how many hats you're wearing. Tom Peterson will be accepting his proclamation. We'll ask you to fire of 1871, which killed more than 250 persons, left 100,000 homeless, and destroyed more than 17,400 buildings, and serves as the motivating force to bring the citizens of Atascadero and elsewhere together to build a safer community. And whereas the 2015 Fire Prevention Week theme, "Hear the Beep Where You Sleep," every bedroom needs a working smoke alarm, effectively serves to remind us that having a working smoke alarm in every bedroom can save your life in event of a fire. And whereas the City of Atascadero is committed to ensuring the safety and security of all those living in and visiting our city, and whereas Atascadero's firefighters are committed to serving the community's emergency needs, reducing the occurrence of fire and fire-related injuries through the prevention, as Atascadero's residents are responsive to public education and safety measures taken to decrease the threat of fire on their life and personal property, and whereas there should be at least one working smoke alarm on every level of the home, outside all sleeping areas, and in every bedroom, and whereas the smoke alarms should also be tested monthly to ensure they are working and batteries need to be replaced. Whereas NFPA found in a survey that 42% of people did not know that a smoke alarm should be installed in every bedroom of a home.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. You're absolutely right. Fire smoke detectors do save lives, and there has not been a loss of life in a sprinklered home. Interestingly enough, I came across this statistic today from the NFPA, and two lines that caught my attention were the public fire departments responded to 1,298,000 fires in 2014. This was an increase of 4.7% from the previous year. Every 24 seconds, a U.S. fire department responds to a fire somewhere in the nation. A fire occurs in a structure about every 64 seconds, occurs every 86 seconds. Fires occur in highway vehicles at a rate of every 188 seconds, and we get a multitude of other fires, wildland, so on and so forth, with about every 52 seconds. As the city manager attested to, a lot of time this season, and all contributed to outside wildland fires. We have a long way to go with fire prevention, but this is one of those first steps that we would encourage all citizens of Atascadero to take, and that is check their smoke detectors, their batteries in their smoke detectors if they don't have one. They are so cheap nowadays to go down to Home Depot or one of our local home improvement stores and pick one up and install it. And if you have any questions with regard to that, feel free to give us a call at the fire department and we'll help you out.
Thank you. Would you like to have
I'd like them all
your
to come up
fire
and join
crew?
Us.
We'll join in one more photo. Well, thank you in the audience for your patience with us as we go through so many presentations. They are each one important to all of us. Next, we have a presentation by Peter Williamson of Slow Regional Ride Share. Oh, boy, and it's t-shirt night, it looks like.
Likes me more after I give them some shirts, so I figured start off with that. Good evening, Mayor O'Malley, council members, and viewers. My name is Peter Williamson, and I'm the employer outreach coordinator at SLOCOG. SLOCOG is our region's transportation planning and funding agency, and our board consists of the county supervisors as well as a council member from each jurisdiction, including Mayor O'Malley. And one of the most cost-effective transportation demand one of the most cost-effective transportation strategies is transportation demand management, and that's where our Slow Regional Rideshare Division comes in. And we have programs in the Rideshare Division for commuters, travelers, K through 12 parents and students, the elderly, and populations with special needs. And if you want to get involved as a parent, an employer, educator, or caretaker, please reach out to us to adequately serve all of our communities. We definitely need your support. Area yet? How about carpooling? Biking? That's going to be a tough sell. Well, I'm here to let you know that it's not about the mode you choose. It's about the movement and not just how you get from point A to point B, but the lifestyle that comes with it. And in the past, Slow Regional Rideshare has focused a lot of our attention on rideshare and bike months, Attention Week and Rideshare Week. Here's our official lineup of transportation fairs. As you can see, we have a presence throughout the county. Unfortunately, nothing in Atascadero at this time, but like I said, we have lots of plans throughout the year, so we'll probably have some activity at the state hospital, et cetera, moving forward. At these transportation fairs, we'll have a bus, our van pools, as well as Bike Slow County presence, so that commuters can consider the best commute option for their needs. Attendees at these events will receive a t-shirt with the awesome logo. Your t-shirts, you got it from Bike Month, but you'll probably get one of those later on, as well as a bite to eat and then other sweet giveaways. So if you are near one of those events, please come by. These events generate excitement with our current audience, of course, but also provide the opportunity to have meaningful conversations with employees on the site. So, for instance, at Applied Technologies in Paso, we'll get to talk with a lot of people that currently drive alone and see why maybe they'll consider using alternative transportation. Who here has seen those commuters going up the Cuesta Grade on their bikes? Nobody's seen those guys? It's pretty impressive. How about who times those traffic signals on El Camino? Well, our hashtag for It's Not a Mode, It's a Movement is Let's Get Visible, and that's about telling those stories. After all, to make alternative transportation meaningful, we have to generate meaningful conversation. On that note, who remembers Hidden Cash Slow from last year? Man, this audience, I'll tell you. Well, we had $100 cash drops at Las Tablas, as well as the St. Williams Park and Ride, and then there was one in Santa Margarita. So anyways, if you like clues and you like cash, we invite you to join us again for our online social media scavenger hunt at Hidden Cash Slow. These campaigns like these definitely allow us to reach a new audience, which is really exciting. And if you have kids in school, save the date for International Walk to School Day, October 7th. Our Safe Routes to School coordinator already has 26 walking school buses at schools throughout the county. None in Atascadero yet, so if you're a parent or educator that would like to get involved, please reach out to me. I have cards on the back table, or you can email info@rideshare.org. And last but not least, you can also earn incentives, join challenges, and share rides to events all year round. But for our Rideshare Week Challenge, it will be employer versus employer of similar sizes. So will Atascadero city staff beat the city staff at Paso Robles? You decide. Does anyone on the board have questions for me this evening?
No.
Terrific.
We look forward to Bike Month, though. That we get out for anyway.
We got to get out all year. Yes. It's not a mode, it's a movement.
Well, I can tell you're a very optimistic young man just by the size of the T-shirts you gave us tonight, but we will work at it, okay? Thank you.
These are goal setters for you and I.
Yeah, these are goal setters, yeah. Well, on that, I'm going to move on to the next item is our consent calendar, and we have three items on the consent calendar considered routine and do not need a lot of discussion. I will be pulling item 2 at the request of the city clerk for further review with the county health department, leaving item 1 and 3. Does any member of the board, council, or member of the public wish to pull either of those items, 1 or 3, for further discussion?
Comment. I don't necessarily want to pull. I wanted to make a clear yes, but it's under the minutes here. That remember we added that paragraph, the two paragraphs, clarifying, and then.
So it's on page 10.
Right. In the middle. It says Mayor Pro Tem Moreno asked that the city clerk add for clarification that it was Mace Management that was willing to continue to have discussions on the issue. And I did add.
Yes, and then
their
if
name.
You look at the third line in that first paragraph, he stated that given their willingness
right.
in the meeting, I had asked that there was clarified to be Waste Management.
Right. So I this is showing what I read during the meeting, and that is what I read. And then you said you would like me to add that, which I did do. So the minutes now reflect.
Okay.
My amended.
Okay, yeah. So that's what that sentence there means. Okay, I wasn't clear that those were the two that connected. So
yeah.
The minutes
sorry,
will
this
now.
This is just showing what I read that night, and then you after I read
okay.
that you said that, and
so
I did
now they
change
read
it.
Waste Management. Okay, yes. Wonderful. Thank you for the.
Councilmember Kelly.
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno.
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley.
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Next item, updates from the city manager. We are pulling it. It'll be deferred for a future meeting.
Thank you, Mayor. The first item I'd like to talk about tonight is the September 11th Patriots Day lighting of City Hall event. This was an incredible event. It was a beautiful night. You couldn't have asked for better weather. It was a combination of a lot of different emotions, both moving and emotional, to a lot of fun and lighthearted. It was for those who were able to attend, I think it was a fantastic night. We started the night with the flyover from the Estrella Warbirds It was a formation of three planes that flew directly across the sunken gardens and over city. After that, we had the art and wine tour in the downtown. There were a lot of people. I heard they almost sold double what they usually did in tickets. There were a lot of people out enjoying the evening, enjoying our businesses downtown. We had Vintage Cowboy Winery actually participating as pouring wine right on the steps of City Hall as part of that art and wine tour. The Historical Society gave tours here of City Hall. A lot of people both from in town who had never had a chance to see the building, and those lots of people from out of town participated in those tours, learning about the unique history here in Atascadero. All of that was followed by a different take on what September 11th means to them, and I can't even talk because it was very moving. Each speaker did a fantastic job. And then after the candlelight ceremony and the flag raising ceremony, the evening was topped off by the countdown to the flipping of the switch by Mayor O'Malley, and the new exterior lights for City Hall came on. So these lights will be standing and will be on from here on out. We have been having them come on at 10, but we've now moved them to a little bit earlier. There was a request as we event, and it was a pleasure to be a part of. We also have another great event coming up, and that's Savor the Central Coast, and that will be this weekend. So the Savor weekend starts with an adventure tour at Bristol Cider House here in Atascadero on Friday from 10 to 2. On Saturday and Sunday, Savor's main event in Santa Margarita will be held from 11 to 4 p.m. on both days. Everyone should be sure to stop by the City of Atascadero's booth to sample just some of what Atascadero has to offer. On Saturday, we will feature Fig Good Food and Grape Emporium, followed by Therapy Honey, Chaparral Gardens Artisan Vinegars, and the Groves on 41 Olive Farm, all paired with Brian's Bread. On Sunday, we'll be pairing McGee's Catering and Tent City Brewing at 11, then catering by Chef Charlie and Bristol Cider House at noon, followed by Avanti Italian Cuisine and Nichols Winery at 2. So it promises to be an incredible day, an incredible showcase of just a taste of what Atascadero has to offer. Basically, everyone will be able to learn about beer at Sunken Gardens on Saturday, October 3rd from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. The event benefits the construction of the new all-inclusive playground to be located at the Colony Park Community Center. The expo will include Elks, barbecue, which is always incredible, bounce houses, inflatable jousting, face painting, local entertainment, local vendors, and so much more. And tied to the expo is an exciting dunk tank challenge. And this is where we all need to open up our pocketbooks here. If $5,000 is raised by the morning of October 3rd, Mayor O'Malley and Chief Haley will get dunked in a huge dunk tank, and we all get to watch. So I think it'll be worth a huge donation just to see him get dunked. So please open your pocketbooks. It's an amazing project. It has a lot of community support. It would be fantastic for everyone here in the community. So it's a very worthwhile project, and it's going to be a lot of fun. All proceeds from the expo and the dunk tank, of course, go towards the new playground. And so please, please come out, and please find, please be generous, all our council members and staff members and anybody else out there listening. We also have Creek Cleanup Day. Cadero, we go through all of the creeks, cleaning up the litter and the trash and the stuff that is accumulated in our creekways throughout the year. So we meet here at City Hall in the parking lot at 9 a.m. Make sure to bring your work gloves and a hat, and we will provide the rest with gloves and trash bags. It's amazing how many dumpsters full of trash, unfortunately, have to get picked up from our creeks. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions council has.
No questions. Excellent job. So, Chief, what are you wearing on our dunk day?
Powder blue tuxedo.
I think we're going to quit this conversation while we're behind. Thank you. Very good. Next. Seeing no one come forward, we'll close the community forum portion, move on to management reports, as we have no public hearings this evening. Management report is professional engineering and environmental services for the phase two of the Del Rio Road US 101 interchange project. And I believe Nick DeBar is going to take the lead on this and introduce our speaker.
And then also some of the funding for highway transportation projects. So with that, I'll turn it over to Ron.
Thank you, Mayor O'Malley, council members. It's really a pleasure to be here today to give you a little bit of background on our agency and what we're doing. There we go. Who we are, I think all of you basically know. Regional transportation planning and programming. We're programming state and federal funds. We're also involved with regional ride sharing. You heard Peter Williamson of our staff kind of go into each of the agencies. A little louder? Okay. I also have John DiNunzio over here on your far right. Raise your hand. John's a new planner that's now been assigned to us. He's assigned to North County. So anything dealing with the city of Atascadero, he's going to be your staff member that coordinates with your staff. Some of the major issues we could involve with in terms of planning, transit plans, bike plans, trail plans. Some of the key issues is highway plans. U.S. Highway 101 study was referenced in your staff report. We looked at a comprehensive improvement of Highway 101. We identified, one, a need that we really need to widen it. Mirror amount, $750, $850 million. Frankly, it's probably not going to happen in my lifetime. So the plan also identified a series of recommendations. The most cost-effective was ride-sharing, van-pooling, carpooling, buses, but also to look at operational improvements within the system. And these came up with 22 different recommendations for improvements. It also identified interchanges throughout the entire region. Del Rio was one of those interchanges. Are feasible, that they're fundable, that they're realistic. We basically threw out the six lanes on 101. Because it's not possible, at least within our lifetime. But we did improve various other projects. Del Rio Interchange, the subject of this meeting, is one of those projects. So let's talk about Del Rio Interchange. It's been a city priority project now for some time. Your staff, your mayor, some of your council members have made it very clear to us in terms of our projects that this has been important. It was included in the Highway 101 mobility as part of the sustainable community strategy that we included in our adopted regional transportation plan. We concurred with the city in the climate action plan that it also reduces vehicle miles traveled, and we believe that it also will reduce congestion for those long-term shopping trips to the advantage of economic development in the city. So we support the project. So we've been working closely with your staff as that project has been developing. And we strongly endorse it. We included it in our plan. When the issue came up in terms of SOCOG funding about a year ago, we talked to your staff, we talked to our mayor, and we indicated that project would be competitive. It has a strong local match, 50% plus. It's those kinds of projects that we have funded in the past. Los Osos Valley Road Interchange, Briscoe Road Interchange, Willow Road Interchange, all about 50-50 in terms of cost. We also felt it was a reasonable cost for an interchange. We've done others. Highway 46 West 101, $65 million. Is it fundable? I don't have $65 million. You've heard about the project cost increases going up for this project at $12 million when you compare it with $30 million. $40 million for a typical interchange, $50 million. It's doable. It's achievable. It's a reasonable cost. It's something that can be completed. So we saw it as a STIP candidate. This chart basically shows the construction funds. These costs go up. This is what's recognized in your staff report. On the downside, our revenue has been going down. More fuel-efficient cars. Most of the revenues that goes into transportation is gas, is a sales tax per gallon. It's not a percent. It's a given amount. The more fuel-efficient cars, less money you have. You get an electric car, you don't pay anything. So the consequence of that is over the years, that funding has gone down from $30 million a year in 2000 to to 2010 to $6 million. And last June, we were expecting $7 million. On June 2nd, we received a notification from the state that that money went to zero. So this will give you an idea of the programming situation that our agency is in our cities and counties. This is the information that we have as we're developing our programming projects. Leave notification that the number is zero. And that our carryover money that we are saving for programming in December for larger projects is now going to pay for existing projects in the STIP because it's now over-programmed. Federal funds, there's a lot of discussions going on at the federal level too. We have two fund sources for street and road related improvements. We're expecting $12 million over 3 years. $27 million of discretionary funds to about, it's not included in these numbers. Keep doing that. So the recommendation is going to our SLOCOG board is we're at a decision point. As I mentioned, we have 22 major operational improvements on Highway 101. We probably have 15 interchanges to build. We're at a point now with the limited funding we have. We might be able to fund just the project development for one project. That's Highway 101, Shell Beach area, or perhaps 227 south of the airport. That's doing the kind of work you're doing now. That's doing the environmental work, the engineering work for one project. Option two that we'll be bringing forward to the board is if we don't do that particular project, or if Caltrans puts pressure on us for 46, we may be funding some regional interchange projects. Now, these are interchanges that have existed. Do we fund access to interchanges, or do we try and fund that congestion on a main line? Caltrans, no longer, their money has deteriorated to the point where up to about 7 or 8 years ago, they don't provide any funding for improvements at all. Except for one, maintenance and rehabilitation, but that doesn't fix interchanges. And Highway 46 has been receiving kind of special funding. So we've been also tracking legislation, state and federal. There's been a lot of activity made. Federal level is a particular bill, it's called MAP 21, Moving Ahead for Progress in the 21st Century. It's been extended 34 times because of the lack of congressional agreement. Currently, it shows that we need about $50 billion a year for steady state funding. The gas tax revenue brings in $35 billion, $15 billion short. Congress's source is typically general fund. That's why it's been continued 34 times. Our prognosis, at best, status quo funding. State funding, there's been a flurry of activity also. Proposals developed on the Republican caucus. Proposed by the Democrats. There's been the League of California Cities, the County Supervisors Association came up with a consensus position that's been routed to various member jurisdictions to advise a special transportation committee to focus on transportation improvements. All of those measures we reported at our last board meeting are focused on maintenance and rehabilitation. Almost at the high end, $6.8 billion being recommended. Nothing to fix the highways. Nothing to fix interchanges. Nothing to address congestion. It is addressing fix it first. It is addressing some major needs. We've raised those issues. There is no interest in this administration, in this legislature, among my counterparts in the big counties, to get money to fix these. So against LA, San Francisco, San Diego, with high state priorities for disadvantaged communities, of which most of those are associated with air quality problems. The implications, increasing congestion, we're not going to be able to complete these projects, significant reduction in SLOCOG funding. Most importantly for you, it's a shift of the responsibility from us being partners to you. Typical interchanges has been funded 50% SLOCOG, 25% developer fees, 25% sales tax or general fees. With that 50% going away, that burden is landing on local jurisdictions. The second part of that that we're bringing to our board is we believe that's unconscionable. We believe that there's some major actions that need to occur. We believe there's a transportation crisis that's growing. It's most public has not a clue because they're seeing projects done. They're seeing some interchanges have been under construction now, but those have been funded, proposed 10 years ago. Is the state of California has given us opportunities at the local level to become a self-help county. Self-help county are those that have passed a regional sales tax, 0.25% to 0.5% to 1%, for transportation purposes. Requires a vote of the people, takes a two-thirds vote. 20 counties have passed measures representing 81% of California's population. Those 20 counties are raising $4 billion a year. In a good year, California is putting up $1 billion a year for highway improvements. So those large counties, they're not clamoring for state money. It's too much of a hassle for the state money. They're doing it themselves. That's why they're being referred to as self-help. So as we've talked with our Fix the Transportation Improvement Program, we're told, we've given you the authority, go to a self-help. If it's important to you, pursue it. So we have done it. We did an initial poll. We presented that poll results in August. The poll was conducted in May. It indicated from the last 4 years ago, economy's recovering. All indicators are moving in the right direction. Voters like the idea and the concepts we are recommending in our plan. Trust in government is up. Affordability is up. Every single indicator we had was up, with one big exception. That 67% vote that we were looking for is lagging pretty significantly, about 57%. And at that time, we kind of recommended, okay, we're going to have to stall out for the time being. Our board says continue working, investigating this, working with various stakeholder groups. And what we found is we kind of questioned some of those poll results. We questioned some of the initial ballot language, which we think could have been improved. Those polls relied on the most prospective voters from the last three elections, high propensity voters. Last three elections had 75 to 95,000 voters, very low turnout. In 2008, we had 135,000 voters. What's going to happen in 2016? So what we have now is, as we've been going on this kind of a roadshow to various stakeholder groups, we've been hearing from key stakeholders, we need to continue moving on this. Stakes are too high for economic development in our region, for some of the plans that we've had, for some of the quality of life projects that we've had. They've recommended we continue to move forward. So why pursue self-help? State and federal funding is diminishing. In our county, it would raise up to $25 million a year. Local control, local projects, you determine how it goes. Staff reports tomorrow with your staff attends at our technical advisory committees. And we'll be identifying that we're at this point. We're given an update, a detailed status report that you saw in your package 2 months ago. We're updating that report. State and federal funding was hopeful 2 months ago, and we feel it's just not existent. The fund estimates, the State Transportation Commission, seeing that the state has not moved forward on legislation, adopted the zero fund estimate. That's what we have to live with. We now have about zero money for highways and about $6 million for other projects to probably keep some of these projects alive. We'll be bringing up these alternatives. Do we focus on this one project? Do we focus on a couple of smaller projects with a lot of local funding? Or do we keep projects progressing, retain self-help county? That's our staff recommendation. That's kind of the recommendation that we've been hearing. The other point that I wanted to raise to you deals with Del Rio. Given this issue, and we were expecting probably we'd be getting a request from you for 50% of the funding. And we said in a bad time, maybe it's 40% of the funding. But we're fully expecting, and I think your city was too. Short term, we don't see that happening. Midterm, we don't see that happening. Under the current funding, we do see that as a possibility, a high possibility, under a potential sales tax measure, which we are going to program. Our recommendation to you, keep moving, keep progress, get your projects shelf ready. We never know what's going to happen. During the last federal stimulus program, the projects got funded are those projects that were ready. There weren't a lot of them ready. So we've always been advising, get projects ready. We never quite know what can happen. You can't enter into partnerships. You can phase projects. This one would be, you already have phase, but there's various components you can accomplish. We'd highly recommend you continue moving forward. We have some funding. Again, for this project at this time, we think that would be very difficult. But I think you're moving in the right direction. I think you need to continue doing so. And with that, maybe, do you want to answer any questions, open it up to questions now, or Mr. Mayor?
We could take some questions now, or we can go through, there's about four speakers. We may want to catch everyone and then come back and direct
That'd
questions.
Fine.
Who could answer them best, because these presentations will overlap. Why don't we go ahead and go through all of the speakers you have lined up, and then we'll come back for council questions.
Sounds good. So we'll have to, if Luke, you can load up the next presentation there. Okay. So I'm the next speaker, and I'm just going to go through the project background real quickly. Some of this will be redundant from the city council, from a lot of the late meetings that you've had in the past couple years. But basically, I'm going to try to keep it focused on the city's project, the interchange project, and not necessarily the Walmart project, because a lot of that's been approved and down the road. So this project was really born out of a traffic study in the environmental impact report for the Walmart Del Rio Marketplace development back in 2008. These interchange improvements are not needed for the Walmart development, but for the marketplace and any other future development, roundabout option at the ramps came into play. So currently, the Walmart project is conditioned to pay their fair share. The combined between Walmart and the marketplace is 53% of the interchange cost. This is a city project, not the El Camino Real Del Rio roundabout, but the actual on and off ramps and the bridge modifications. And these are actually, this 53% is on top of standard traffic impact fees. So this is a special traffic impact fee that would be earmarked for the interchange improvements. Back at the time of project conditioning for Walmart, a cost estimate of $4.5 million was used to determine this fair share. And at the special traffic impact fee for the Walmart Marketplace project. So some of Walmart's responsibilities and their conditional approvals is to have some off-site public improvements. One of them is to construct this roundabout number three, we'll call it. So we kind of powwowed earlier today, and when we decided to call for simplicity, and I first of all want to back up and apologize for all the acronyms in the report. I mean, looking back at it, it was like, wow, there are a lot of acronyms, but in the Caltrans world, that's what it is. But if we kind of look at each roundabout that's proposed, so the one on the west side of the west or southbound ramp is, we'll call roundabout one. The one on the northbound or east side of the freeway is roundabout two, and then the El Camino one we'll call roundabout three. So there, Walmart is required to construct roundabout number three. They're also required to widen El Camino to a four-lane arterial for about half a mile, and also widen Del Rio Road as a multi-lane collector. There are also two traffic signals are mandated to install, one at El Camino Real at San Anselmo East. That's the northern piece of San Anselmo. And then also at a new road that's going to be the main entrance into the Walmart site. They're also required to install amenities such as Class 2 bike lanes, landscaping along the street, sidewalks, and some transit stops, and then other related improvements as well. And just a rough estimate of all these off-site improvements is $2 to $2.5 million. So that's just not a detailed cost estimate. We'll get that once they bring us public improvement plans and they get their bonding. But that's just an estimate I took a shot at. So some of the numbers here, estimated traffic fees, standard traffic impact fee of $1.4 million. And then there's that other special traffic fee towards the interchange, which is that second line at $1.159 million. There's also a cost overrun fee that they're mandated. Anything over $4.5 million in construction of the city's project, any overrun of that, they're required to pay another $200,000 to. And then they've got an improvement credit that is related to those off-site or public improvements that they're mandated to do. That number, $300,000 or so. So total traffic fees that they're estimated to pay is about $2.5 million. And some of these fees, some are due, they're conditioned to be paid at certain times, so there's a $250,000 payment that they need to make when they agree to sign the conditions of agreement. And then also another $600,000 at the time of grading permit, and then the remainder is due at the time of building issuance of the permit. The marketplace traffic fees are similar. The standard traffic impact fee is $3 million. Also, the second line there is for the roundabout or city project, roundabout 1 and 2, a little over $1 million. Also, they also have a cost overrun fee. Anything over $4.5 million on the city's project, they're mandated to pay a difference up to $200,000. And again, they have an improvement credit as well. So with the marketplace, they total at $2.384 million. They have similar requirements for when they need to make partial payments on that, but it's all due, I believe, at time of building occupancy. And then there's some other traffic impact fees that are associated with both these projects, some of the residential and other auxiliary development that's going to occur around that. And again, it's similar. One is standard impact fee, just under $300,000, and then another tagged special impact fee for the city project at about $145,000, and they also have improvement credits, so that's about $400,000. So all these three numbers total up to about $5.29 million that are donated, I guess, towards circulation and combined circulation standard impact fee, plus earmarked for the Del Rio interchange. It's a little project background on the city's project. Kittleson was hired in August of 2011 to review and evaluate the interchange recommendations and options. Wallace was hired shortly thereafter in November 2012 for the phase one, or what Caltrans's project initiation development, PID. And that's the phase that we've been in since that point, and that Wallace has been working on, that we're nearing the end of. Also, Caltrans required a cooperative agreement with the PID, or the phase one. That amount was $104,000. And moving ahead, they won't require any kind of payment for any new or amended cooperative agreement for phase two or three or four, I believe. So. And then also, as Mr. DeCarli mentioned, that this project is on the regional transportation plan, and we're looking at getting funding for it, and it was looking great up until a few months ago, which now we have a big hiccup in the funding. So with that, I guess we'll wait, and I'll introduce George Aguilar with Wallace Group. George has been the project manager, project engineer on the city's project. He's also been helping a lot with the roundabout number 3, the Walmart roundabout, and making sure that those design reviews are really going to be in line with our project as well, to make sure that we have a nice seamless transition, because the roundabout project that Walmart is required to build, roundabout 3, may occur as early as perhaps next summer, but it will definitely occur before the city project. So with that, I'll turn it over to George.
Great. Thank you, Nick. And good evening, Mayor O'Malley and council members. It's my pleasure to be here. I'm going to go ahead and get us started. I wanted to do a quick reintroduction of the team, because while I'm speaking to you, I've got a lot of people behind me on the team that do a lot of the work that I'm going to be presenting to you. First of all, Wallace Group, local firm. We've got a transportation department that focuses on just transportation. We're backed up with Kittleson and Associates, which is our traffic lead. So they've got some history in here. They're also a national firm that has an expertise in roundabout. So while we're very confident, we like to have peer review to make sure we're right. So it's a checks and balances issue. We also have Quincy Engineering, who's a roadway firm, yes, but they're very focused on bridges and structures. So again, another firm for a different type of peer review check and backup to make sure that when we speak to you, we've checked our numbers, we've checked our information, we've checked our design so that we can speak with confidence to you. The presentation outline, I've got a number of slides, so I just wanted to give you a quick run-through of what we're going to be talking about. Overall, an explanation for everyone's sake of what we mean by phase 1, 2, 3, 4, all these acronyms, PID, PAED, PSNE, et cetera. So make sure that we're speaking in the same language. Then we're going to do a little bit of an overlap with what some of what you've heard, progress to date, and then focus on where we are right now. And that overlaps a little bit with some of the other information that Mr. Carley brought forward and the next steps. So let's get started on this little tour here. All right. Very colorful. It emulates something that you see in the staff report. A lot of stuff in there. So I'm going to try to bring it to everyday language. Phase 1 is what we've been in. And this is the PID acronym that you've been seeing, the Project Initiation Documents. Within that box, you see the more acronyms, Project Study Report, Project Development Support, the PSR, PDS. You see ICE, Intersection Control Evaluation, and then you see PSR, which is similar to the other one, but it's a different document altogether. Phase 1 has a lot in it. Phase 2, which is the next step that is being proposed, is the PAED phase. In there, you've got a real focus on the environmental documentation. Got a lot of other details in there. Project report is the next step of preliminary design. But overall, I think one way to look at it is the phase 1 is the planning level. The phase 2 is really focused on the environmental documentation and how you refine it. Look at all the studies that are involved in there. You do have design support and refinement, but that's the real focus, the environmental document. Then the blue box, phase 3, we're looking at PSNE and right-of-way. So after you've gotten environmental documentation cleared, signed, Caltrans, with those signatures, says that's the project that's approved for to go to design. And that's how you enter into that phase 3. You've also now figured out everything that the environmental process would require of the final design, such as mitigation requirements. So you can blend those into your design, and you know pretty darn well where you're going to be with right-of-way needs. So whether it's temporary or permanent right-of-way needs, you bring the right-of-way component into that phase after you've got an environmental document signed off. So that takes us through phase 1, 2, and 3. And we are overlapping those phases somewhat in the technical realm to make sure that we have accurate information to bring forward to you. Phase four, you can't overlap. That's the construction. And that can't start, of course, until you have the final documents and you can move forward. All right. One of the nuances that I wanted to talk to here is the process also has an estimating portion to it. And back to where I introduced some of our key team members, they are part of our peer review process for the estimating, not just the design, but for the estimating as well. And overall, the Caltrans process has guidelines. It's very structured. Guidelines on how you funnel in the percentages that you use at each phase. So as you know, more and more, you're going to define more and more in line item quantities, et cetera, that make up the total estimate. And you're going to therefore reduce your contingencies as you go through the actual process. Examples. And this dovetails not only here in the North County, but also with something that Mr. DeCarli said about funding. We have the 101 46 East on-ramp, southbound on-ramps in the one long rectangular stretch there. That's a project that I was a project manager on. And, of course, you all know that just a little north of us here. It was a project that was a recipient of funds that became available. Then you also have on the more rectangular or square type of a graphic there, the 101 46 West planning concept. It is a project that was deemed to be phased, and the theater drive alignment's already been done. The Vine Street realignment hasn't been done, that's phase two, and then you've got a couple of roundabouts, phases three and four. It was the recipient of extraordinary funds, the ARRA funds that became available at one point. So local and well-known examples. All right, let's get into the progress to date. We'll go quickly through these, kind of administrative but very important. The cooperative agreement, that's been completed. It's a legal document. It defines the city deliverables and responsibilities and what Caltrans is going to be responsible for. It's in a document that is phase dependent. So phase one has its own. Phase two will have so many different concepts for projects all over the state. Their staff was running all over the place and spending a lot of resources on projects that really weren't viable. So for that reason, the state said, hey, you want us to oversight one of your projects, local agency X, Y, or Z, put some skin in the game. We're going to charge you for the oversight. And there was a relative reduction. But that's why, as Nick said earlier, we had some Caltrans oversight costs. Another thing that was accomplished is the project charter, and it basically says who's at the table for this process in the PID process and what the responsibilities are. And when you get to a stalemate, what are the next steps you need to do to resolve that stalemate? What's the higher up path? The intersection control evaluation, that is a document that came to be, or a process that came to be as we entered into this. So we were one of the first ones in the state that actually processed one of these. And it's a good thing because what it does is you don't have to study stop control and all the traffic analysis. You don't have to study the signalized intersections anymore. And it's a high-level traffic view that says what's the appropriate, what's the cost-value alternative. And once you determine that, you can say, okay, continue on the PID process, and you don't have to spend time, waste energy, waste dollars studying all these other things that we know aren't going to be the best bang for the buck. All right, now we're going to just take a quick look at some of the concepts, the design alternatives. And as Nick mentioned, roundabout number one's at the top. It's on the west side of 101. Roundabout number two is right there in the middle, and it's on the just the east side of 101. And roundabout number three is at El Camino and Del Rio. So we have three alternatives in the PSR document, and that is one, no project, and what happens. So all the traffic impacts with no project.
and bad things happen. Basically, you jam up some of the intersections because the queue is so long it goes across. So it's not a viable project, or alternative, I should say, but it has to be studied and included in the document. The real alternatives are alternative 2 and 3. The one that we're seeing right now, the graphic, is alternative 2. And you can see Ramona inside is highlighted in blue on the text. That's where Ramona comes in and connects into the roundabout number 1. The next graphic is for alternative number 3, where Ramona goes outside of that roundabout and further to the west. So I'll back up a little bit. If you just focus on the highlighted yellow circle, there's Ramona in. When we did our estimates, we were using topographic mapping that was specifically generated for the interchange review. So we had all the three-dimensional looks that we needed to look at. We refined the layouts with Caltrans input and with peer review, so we started looking at it. What does it really do when you start doing the design? And then we anticipated the support costs for each one of those phases, and those were oversights in the previous estimates. We came up with a very structured, laid-out process of what our estimating is, and it's included and broken down inside of the PSR document as an attachment. It's basically focused on roadway, on structures, and right-of-way, and what we did resulted in a subtotal of those three items, depending on the alternative, between 8.8 and 9.2 million. Then the support costs, we subtotal those for each one of those phases to about 3.1 million. So where we came in was, you know, rounded to that 12 million number that we, all sorts of little things that when you put them all together, come up with a big number. Right-of-way costs and structure modifications, because there are standards that are necessary for bikeways. When we last presented to the council, the direction was, all right, continue, but pursue funding. And we did that. So we continued developing it, but we were also participants with and assisted with the 101 Mobility Master Plan. The city staff asked us some details on that. City staff, SLOCOG, all came together and said, yes, that's a good process or a good project to include. That plan was approved December of 2014. That plan was, and Rio became one of those projects that was in the RTP. So, success. We got council direction, and we moved forward with it. The problem was then, okay, because of the cycles and the way everything works out, I won't bore you with all the technical details, the PSR PDS document that we were pursuing needed to be a different document for funding cycles and scheduling to be able to go ahead and fund all the way through the construction dollars that we were targeting. So we took the PSR PDS, went to Caltrans and said, will you allow us to do a PSR? Well, that type of a document hadn't been used very much at all in the last 12, 13 years. So we had to get an exception to go backwards and use that type of document that would allow us to fund the construction. We got the exception. It necessitated a higher level of technical analysis. Well, we were front-loading our analysis, so we had that higher level of technical analysis. And it also required life cycle cost assessment. And that is, well, exactly what kind of a roadway structural section are you going to put in here? Caltrans requires that for figuring out what their maintenance costs will be and comparing it to their capital costs at the front end. The way it's set up, it by and large always comes out with concrete being the right surface for your structural section. In this particular case, that wasn't really appropriate. But the equations and the templates that they had spat out, yeah, it's concrete. That would be very expensive and head us in the wrong direction for initial costs. So we started pulling apart the box. Well, this doesn't really apply, that doesn't really apply. Went through the district brought in headquarters, longer story shorter, navigate the design, and likely lead us to some contract change orders during construction in addition. So a couple of graphics. They're cool to us engineers. This is the 3D modeling that we're doing, and this is why we had all that information already available, that we could look at things and say, okay, these are the costs, these are the earthwork numbers, et cetera. So we were ready with the technical. Where we were, where we are going now is the next steps. Phase two, another one of those acronyms, the PANED phase. More refined analysis. And remember, this is really geared towards the environmental document. So we refined the preliminary design to see if we can minimize some impacts. And it's a very specific Caltrans transportation environmental document. Yes, it'll take some information from the previous environmental documents for the overall Walmart EIR, but it's different. Within that process, there will be a informational process where we talk about not just the project, but we're going to bring forward some educational components for the roundabouts when people have questions. Well, how does this work? How do pedestrians get in and out? How about bicyclists? Does it really work the way it's supposed to do? There's all sorts of ways that we can have videos and other graphics and bring that forward in a public workshop forum. And that was St. Louis Caltrans District 5, as well as Fresno Caltrans District 6 or Central Region have to sign off on the environmental document. So it's no small matter. You go through the gauntlet a couple of times. When you have the drafts signed off and circulated, and then you respond to any comments, and you get the final out there, and you get the environmental document signed, then the district can sign off on the project report. When you get both those documents signed, that's what constitutes project approval, or the PA in that acronym. When you have the PA, then Caltrans says, yea, verily, we can look at the design. Phase three is that design process, but what's included in design? Yes, it's all the final details. It's the plans that we're all familiar with. It's also technical specification that tells the contractor exactly what to do. It's also the right-of-way acquisition, phase three, phase four. And at that point, you look to advertise and award a construction contract. You will be looking to hire a firm to do construction management or however you want to staff it. You'll have some design support for during construction, and that's when you actually get to know all your true final costs, when you wrap it all up. And that's construction. Those are the phases. As we've heard, there's some hiccups in the funding cycle, but the regional transportation plan is in place, and this project looks good on it for those reasons that you've already heard. The phases, as you can see, they're outlined. There's a general schedule that we're forecasting. And though the funding is uncertain, like in the two examples that you saw at the very front end, when you're shovel ready, good things can happen. And with that, close it up.
Thank you. Does that conclude your presentation component? There are others that may speak during public comment, but...
One more presentation. You have me again.
Okay.
So I just wanted to kind of wrap up or the conclusion on some of the presentations. Just some of the considerations to continue to get worse, and, you know, the congestion gets so bad that, you know, something's going to have to give at some point. But if you get the project shelf ready, you have some opportunities. It's the best possibility for short-term and long-term funding. It gets a really, you know, becomes more of an attractive project. You can move quickly. As George mentioned earlier, too, you know, that stimulus money that occurred, you know, 7-8 years ago for those shovel-ready projects. Apparently, there weren't a lot of projects that were, quote-unquote, shovel-ready. But, you know, this would be one of those things. If things continue to get worse, actually opportunities come up for this. Also, if, you know, Slocog is successful in their efforts to become a self-help county, that would be a huge injection for the funding. I believe it was $25 million a year that they are estimating to get from that 0.5% sales tax. As I mentioned, there's other federal grants and stimulus monies that might be available. And as I've mentioned, it can't go on forever. The project is competitive. It's on the regional transportation plan. It goes a long ways to reduce the vehicle miles traveled for the county. Greenhouse gas emissions, big time also there. You know, it's very attractive with reducing those emissions. And it's Slocog is really kind of considers it a regional city might feel like this is worth contributing towards. Another reason is there is transportation impact fees. Of that $5.3 million, almost $3 million are earmarked for the city's project, the interchange improvement project, roundabout 1 and 2. And the local funding also really helps with scoring the project by other funding agencies. You know, if we get some stimulus money or those other things, you know, if we only need, say, 25% of the project cost to make this happen, you know, it becomes a much more doable thing. And then, as George mentioned, you know, project approvals are good for some time. You know, I don't know if he's ever heard of Caltrans not honoring a formerly approved project. Usually they might die just because, well, I don't know if any, probably be a good question for him, but I'm not sure if there's any project that actually allowed extensions to coincide with funding. And so it's kind of that shovel ready. You see that common denominator in a lot of these. It's important to get it shovel ready if you want to actually make this a reality. A big one is economic development. Currently, Walmart is the only property that is allowed to move forward without improving the interchange. The Del Rio Marketplace and other future developments can't move ahead until that happens. This is really going to be a prime development location. Walmart generates a lot of traffic, and what retail and commercial really likes to see is a lot of that traffic and the spin-off commercial. The big box retailer, I guess, concept is what they define it as. Sales tax will go up significantly and increase property taxes as well. There may be some opportunity for public-private partnerships. You know, this is probably one of those things that doesn't happen all the time, but I know one of the developers is, you know, has been known to take on some of these public improvements. And then as time goes on and the project gets delayed, project costs will increase, influenced too by supply and demand of raw goods. And, you know, if there's a big boom in China or something, you know, prices will go up here, or asphalt cost, or whatever it might be. A land acquisition cost may also increase. Although soft costs, or just like construction costs, are sure to go up too. Sure, you know, I'll know how expensive city attorneys are and engineers. And then there might be also some additional regulatory requirements that will certainly complicate and drag out the project and require more of that environmental documentation. It's a pretty long, I don't really see a lot of those requirements being lessened in the future. So with that, here's a schedule was also included in your packet. Kind of to date and then moving ahead. I won't really go through what's already occurred, but after tonight, if the city council decided to move ahead with this recommendation. There's still going to be four additional times at this project, the times that the City Council will see this. This particular phase is probably one of the more expensive phases, and it seems like, I understand, you don't have a shovel in the ground, you're not doing any improvements physically, it's all this planning work, and this particular phase two portion of the project is really heavy on the environmental piece, so the environmental documents and studies and everything else will really get weeded out, and at the end of that phase, you'll have a project that has approval for a lot of those aspects. So just let me see if I hit every point here. And really, you know, the money is there. I mean, currently there's no general funds that are being spent on the project. The tax increment fee or transportation impact fees are really the money that can be used towards the design effort to go towards this project. It's, you know, there's monies, approximately $3 million, that have to be spent on this project. And if as we move ahead, you know, this next phase will be about 18 months. And then after that, the phase three will be about a year to get it basically ready to bid out. So you've got about 2.5 years even before you're ready, and we got great pricing for it. And, you know, the same thing could happen. So the construction costs are really, at this point in time, there's, you know, more uncertainty in how much that is going to cost, and that's why there's a 25% contingency added. Once it gets ready to go out for bid and that we got plans and specs and we're ready to put it out to get solicit contractor bids, we'll have about a 5% contingency per Caltrans requirements. We can always have additional money set aside for it, but you know, a lot of those things will be vetted out. So I guess, you know, at the end of the day, the question, I guess the biggest question is this a good investment for the city? If the city council feels like, I guess I would ask myself, and the timing, you know, is a good timing. It is a long process to go through, so getting that project shovel ready will really be a big milestone if we ever get to that point. So, again, just wrapping up here, the recommendation is to authorize the city manager to execute a contract with Wallace Group for the PAED phase of the Del Rio 101 interchange project for a fee not to exceed $798,500. And then also authorize the city manager to execute a new or amended cooperative agreement with Caltrans for the project. And with that, I'm available to take questions. I know Rochelle is, and so is Ron and George. So, well, one other thing, Clint Pierce from Madonna Enterprises is also here. He is the developer for the Del Rio Marketplace, and I'm sure he would be more than happy to answer any questions as well.
Thank you. Well, how I propose to proceed is I'm going to do a little review from my recollection of history, having served on San Luis Council of Governments for the extent of this project has been considered, and also through all of the past discussions on Walmart. Then I would suggest we could either hear Mr. Pierce after that, or we could take council questions first. I will remind us all that we have made a commitment on two things, that so far we've kept our promises. One, we're going to make a decision based on cost-benefit analysis, economic analysis. We're going to research as we are over time, and at the point we have to make a decision, if it's a good investment for our city, we're going to go forward. If it's not, we won't. We've looked at this for a number of years, and we've always decided to keep moving forward each step. It's looked like it's worth going forward on. And the other thing we have promised, and we've kept that promise, we've done more public process than any other city has done on a project of this size, and I see we're going to continue to have lots of decision points with input from the community, so we don't have to rush through. We won't be rushing through tonight. We're going to make sure all council gets questions answered or at least posed. I also suggest I'm going to do a little bit different on Q&A. I'm going to go left, right, left, right. I'm going to begin with Councilman Kelly, then Councilman Sturdivant, then Mayor Pro Tem Moreno, then Councilwoman Fonzie, and then I will go with questions at the end if I have any left, because my colleagues will probably take care of that. But I will suggest that I'll make a few comments, and then I would suggest we take a short break and then come back, and I will ask the council if they want to proceed with questions first or hear from Mr. Pierce. A couple things I wanted to review. I'm glad you mentioned a couple of projects, $60 million, $80 million, turned out to cost $30 million, which was quite a big price tag. Fortunately, the cost-funded interchange in the county, right over here, Highway 41-101, beautiful. I asked my colleagues to support spending about $700,000 of city funds to do some nice brick facade and a few little extras to make it blend in with our downtown. We did that. We were very fortunate as a community. Unfortunately for the rest of the county, that was the last fully funded project in our county. And that's where we went into a phase where you looked at maybe 50% of funding on overpasses. I would like to go back to that slide you had on Walmart improvements, because, you know, I know the Tribune does the best they can in reporting, but I get so many questions from folks after they read all of the media. What is going on with this cost? It sounds like Walmart isn't paying enough, that somehow their investment is capped. And I want to make sure we understand we're really talking about two different projects, as I think you indicated, but not everyone might catch the nuance. There's the Walmart project, which is fully funded, approved, and moving ahead. And then there's everything else. And when I look at the Walmart responsibilities, sometimes folks think they're limited in terms of their investment. It's capped what they're going to pay. But that's not really the case if I understand this list. This is a list of things that they are required to do by Walmart. Walmart's paying for, and they're paying the full cost. And if the costs go up, they pay the increased cost. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So that is the Walmart project. It's approved. It's going ahead. What we're talking about is the other three quarters of this project, which is the unbuilt areas around Del Rio. Now, also, Walmart is required to contribute towards some of those improvements on the other side of the freeway. Now, that's the part that's put in with an estimate, and they made a contribution. And what's good for us is the fact that they have to prepay that amount. We're not going to... It is capped. It's an amount of money we're going to have. But we're not going to save it for some future expenditure and don't know what it's going to cost. We're going to use their money to leverage now to answer those questions, to be shovel ready. We're going to do the environmental impact report. We're going to do these studies that are required no matter what we do. And essentially, we're using Walmart's investment, in addition to all the improvements they're going to make, to tell us, is this the next thing to do, and what do we need to do? And that's what's going to make us shovel-ready to be competitive if there is any state or federal funds. Now, it's looking bleak right at the moment, but the competitive of all the reasons you said. Vehicle miles traveled, as I've often said, the best thing we can do for our environment is economic development in bringing our shopping at home. If we reduce vehicle miles traveled, that is good for the environment. That happens to be a criteria that state and federal government use for funding. So if anything frees up, yeah, we're competitive. But I think you brought up a very good point. Where we're going now is to be as self-sufficient as we can, and where the money is going to come for a project like this is economic development. Now, the problem with so many other overpasses is they're already fairly well developed. They have to look for traffic mitigation funds. There's some advantage to being behind, so to speak, because we have basically Walmart paying for their portion. All the rest of the property is undeveloped. And guess what? If development occurs, just like Walmart, each business, new business that comes in, has to pay their fair share. Well, since it's basically undeveloped, if it goes forward, then those businesses would be required to also pay for those fees to build those other overpasses. Is that correct? Much will be a cost-benefit analysis issue. So if a media outlet says you can't afford it because of these costs, well, I don't know that until I see what the benefits are. And that's the kind of thing that the council will be looking at in the future. Now, if other partners come along and make this easier because they see it as an investment, all that much better. So that's the kind of stuff we'll be talking about tonight. Council, everyone in the community that's here tonight has all of their input taken in, but I think it'd be wise for us to take a short break, then we'll come back, and I'll start with Councilman Kelly when we get back. Thank you. Just a 5-minute break. We can be fast. Thanks. And again, a special thank you to all of our special guests that came out tonight. Long project. So thank you. We're going to go ahead. I had some discussion. I believe, Councilman Kelly, you would defer your questions till we go ahead.
Well, I think I suggested that maybe Mr. Pierce put his comments in. So if we do have some questions, it might be referred back to his participation or whatever he has to say with the project.
Very good. Well, we'll go ahead and then welcome Mr. Pierce, and then we'll entertain council questions to any of the folks that are speak. Welcome.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor and Council. Clint Pierce, live in San Luis Obispo, and I'm with Madonna Enterprises, and we're the owner of the Del Rio Marketplace, the former annex property. And thank you for allowing me to speak. And I echo comments from the others, and I won't go into all of the minutia because, one, I don't understand every nuance of it, but I get the big picture on it. I really feel and I really strongly encourage that you move ahead with phase two. I think this is so critical for not only for this area and for these projects, but also for Atascadero. Every day that this project is delayed is one more day that our stores can't open. Our stores, I believe, are going to be great community-serving stores. They're going to keep people from driving out of town. They're going to give them more interesting options and alternatives for their everyday life. It'll be regional-serving, but really community-serving. But it also is going to produce a lot of revenue. And Mayor O'Malley, you framed it really well, the cost-benefit. The benefit to the city, among all of the qualitative things, the quantitative, there's going to be a lot of sales tax revenue, and those can't come in until the interchange is open. We can't open a single store until the interchange is opened up and fully improved. So we really, in fact, I shed a little tear, I think, when I saw 2020 for the final completion date, because I think when we started looking at the project, we were thinking 17, 18, and I know how things drift. That's just the way the world works, it seems like. But anyway, the sooner the better for us. Part of the project, the formerly annex, we call it Del Rio Marketplace, but we all know that it's the non-Walmart portion of the center. And more recently, to add for flexibility of infrastructure planning and also to enlarge our footprint, because we really believe in this area and we believe that this is a great project. We are in escrow on a couple of additional parcels also right there at the corner of 101 Del Rio and El Camino. So, you know, again, when you look at cost benefit, that's just two more properties that are going to be developed with the rest of ours as soon as we get approvals. So it's not like That's going to be 20 years from now when those properties might develop and start sending sales tax revenues in. That's going to be as soon as we get the green light. We're really excited about the project. We're really eager to get going, and I sure hope that that you approve phase two here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, there was one more. I would like to commend the city on being great partners in this. Partners, I guess that's the right word. Cooperative stakeholders, I think, is probably maybe more appropriate. But the $12 million estimate, I still believe that that's a high number. In fact, one way that we're going to help drive that cost down is we've already agreed creative cost savings, things like that, that working together, we can make this a more cost-effective project for everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. That was my experience working with some other overpasses. First, it seemed like engineers' job was to find every potential cost there could be. The price kept going up. We kept sweating. And then we started this thing called value engineering. Then they started whittling the cost back down. We kind of got the job done. So appreciate that creative work, and it is good to have. You are a good partner for us. We really appreciate you coming to town, and we will be working with you, I trust. With that, I'll go ahead and again, I'm going to go from Councilman Kelly, Councilman Sturdivant, left, right. Go ahead, Councilman Kelly.
Yes, I really don't have any questions. I met earlier with Jorge and Nick today, and I had a lot of questions this morning that I asked. Funds, we couldn't ask for any greater players. Mr. Pierce, you stepped up to the plate. I thank you is probably not enough word to being a partner on this. And, with that in the presentation that was made this evening, I'm prepared to go forward with it.
Thank you. Councilman Sturdivant.
I just have a few questions. Thank you very much for the presentation. Very succinct, very to the point, very all-encompassing. At least it's a lot clearer view of what we have before us. I really appreciate that. I just have a couple questions for Mr. Aguilar, if that would be all right. You had mentioned about the environmental studies coming up, or the environmental portion of the study, and my question is there going to be public workshops, public input in this process?
Yes, sir. When we go into phase two, there's a draft environmental document that is prepared, an internal working document, this administrative draft. When it's approved to be circulated as a draft, then is when we come out to the public, and we have that educational process on the project as well as the roundabouts, and that's when the public has the opportunity to provide comment, typically in written format as well as verbal format, that will take down some stenographer comments.
Okay, and my other question is when you talked about, you showed us the pictures of Ramona in, Ramona out. Mm-hmm. I was just kind of curious, is this something that Caltrans, are we looking at cost on that? Are we looking at Caltrans looking at either one saying this is better or worse? What exactly was that, what's the determining?
It could have been cul-de-sac, but we opted to try to keep the circulation flow as it's going. Now, we're looking at it from the perspective they're going to be in the roundabout, or pushed out as far away from the roundabout to give you intersection distance for a queue distance for a left turn in or something like that. So that's what defined those two alternatives.
Okay, so who makes that decision when it comes to right down to it?
It is going to be a process decision. So Caltrans will be in the mix. We'll be making some recommendations. The city will be. But overall, it's called the PDT, another acronym, mm-hmm. Project Development Team, and we're all stakeholders in it. And when the PDT says that's the one to move forward, essentially that's going to be it. Now, while I say that, it's in the environmental document. So the environmental process and the comments and the resolution of all those comments, when you come out of that phase two, that's when the decision is made.
Oh, very good. Thank you. Now, Mayor, I have one question for Mr. Del Carli. Would you like me to ask?
Go ahead.
Okay. I just have one question for Mr. Del Carli. Actually, maybe two. De Carli.
Yes.
Yes. When you were the self-help county funding, is that that's a ballot measure that would have to go on a ballot?
That's correct.
Is there a time frame that you've thought about or that you know that would be if you're going to move forward with that, when it would go on the ballot and when funding would be seen, the first funding from that?
Optimistically. Kind of the target date, it would be November 2016. Presidential election, high turnout election, which means we would have to be developing a program, an expenditure plan, ballot language, approved by our board, reviewed by all the cities, majority of cities with majority of population, July 2016. So it's a very robust time frame.
Yes.
It's a very high threshold. All of them are based upon polling data, input, and that's going to be the question that lies at our board meeting in October. Mm-hmm. Do we go down that path or not? We think that there's a window, kind of a one-shot window because of the high turnout. Without that, we're going to expect it 8 to 10 years out. That's kind of my gut reaction.
And is the county, are they the ones who manage the funds?
It would be SLOCOG would manage the funds. Typically, most of them have a certain amount of funding going for broad regional issues like freeway improvements, some going towards transportation, senior transportation, active transportation, but a large percentage of it also going back to local jurisdictions to do what you would like to do with it. Most of it, maintenance, has always been rated really high. That's what we've done. The polling has basically said those four or five things are real high. The public has real strong feelings about all of those. And we try and develop that into a plan and then try and figure out, okay, how do you allocate that out?
Very good. Thank you. Thank you.
While you're there, Councilman Sirvin asked, so who would manage this? The county, and you said SLOCOG. Could you, I know you know all about SLOCOG, but for our listening public, could you elaborate a little bit? What makes up SLOCOG? How are decisions made?
Okay, we're referred to as the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments. We're a regional transportation planning and programming agency. If we decided to move in this area, the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors would have to designate SLOCOG as the authority. Now, SLOCOG currently consists of an elected representative from each of the seven cities. Your mayor, Tom Malley, is representative from the city of Atascadero, plus a representative of each of the five.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno.
Thank you. Mr. DeCarli, I take it from your presentation that during the session on transportation with the legislature, nothing even happened with the Fix-It-First funding. Is that correct?
Nothing has happened so far. You've had, in your staff report, I gave you a pretty good update on the different positions that was out there. And to have a fee or a tax go forward, gas tax, vehicle license fee, vehicle registration fee, road access fees are all things that were considered. It requires a two-thirds vote of the legislature and approval by the governor. That requires unanimous, right now at this point, unanimous support from the Democrats and their side. Mm-hmm. And it requires two or three Republicans to vote. And in unison, they've indicated no to fee increases or tax increase. So with that, probably the sweet spot is what we identified, I think, in our comparison. In a staff report, it's going out Friday. We did an update, Ellers, without some kind of a, if there's not able to secure the two-thirds, then the governor's talking about doing something with a majority vote, $700 million. To give you an idea, $1 billion is typically all the proposals underway is 50% to Caltrans for maintenance, 50% to cities and counties for maintenance. So again, it doesn't address this, but it does help address the maintenance issues in all cities and Caltrans. That is a major issue.
Right, and remind me too, each billion is something like $3 million to our county.
That's only for a highway component.
Okay.
So
I'm getting off topic here. So
yeah, so it starts dropping pretty dramatically. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I do have questions for Mr. Aguilar. Jorge, thank you. Very good presentation. The contingency, I spoke with you yesterday, and my concern was, you know, with this contingency, you know, you look at, you know, prices increasing and you can only be so sure in the moment of an estimate, but you've done and so we talked about contingency and the amount that's actually in there as contingency, not to mention the dearth that Mr. Pierce had brought up. So I'm thinking, just so the public understands, what amount in there really is contingency plus this possibility of dearth, so we kind of have a level of comfort with that.
Thank you, and absolutely, I can answer that, but I'm going to throw a couple of nuances in there as I answer it.
Oh, great.
We have multiple sections in the estimate, and I outlined some of the four, the roadway, the structures, right-of-way, and the support. In the roadway alone, there are very detailed estimates all the way through detours, section 7 of the estimate format. Then you get to minor items, and because we're not going to look at markers and stripes and things like that for this item, we put a big percentage in there, 10% of everything else, boom. So you've already got some built-in minor contingencies within that section. Then you get into Section 9, mobilization, and that's just straight. Then you get into Section 10, which is supplemental, and that's some additional contingency for the unknown unknowns that might be coming forward. So in a roundabout way of answering your question, I wanted to set the stage. You have certain sections that are already pumping in some monies in there. Section 13 of the estimates is where we focus on that contingency, that clean number in vernacular, and that's in the 25% range. And for, I'm looking at, I believe, alternative 2 right now. Looking at my paperwork, that's $1.3 million in just straight contingency just there. And as we've noted before, and we talked about just the earthwork number, so for our purposes, we must, at this point, itemize everything out as if we were paying for it right out of pocket. We know that there's going to be some dirt that's going to become available for us. So in our estimating, we had planned for alternative 2 just under 58,000 cubic yards of just under 1.2 million in just dirt costs. Now, there will still be some transporting and compaction costs that are related to bringing in the dirt, but you're not going to be trucking it from somewhere else, and it's not going to be purchased from somewhere else and then trucked. So those costs are going to go down significantly. So you could look at that as a known contingency that we can't really count just yet.
Right. So combined, it's about $2.5 million mm-hmm. in contingencies overall.
Yes.
Okay. And then my final question is, if the Caltrans approval is about a 3 to 5 year shelf life, or is it 5 years? Have you seen it go on longer? If for some reason we get to the, you know, 4.5 year mark and things are looking further out there, what does Caltrans typically do in a situation such as that?
For phase two, when we're focusing on the environmental document, once you get those sign offs. Standard mode is a 3 year shelf life, and if it wasn't a complicated, it can extend a little bit further out, and that's where we're talking reasonably be foreseen between 3 and 5 without really batting an eye. Now, everything changes at times, so everything's subject to change, so what I'm saying today may not be true 3 to 5 years out from now, but here today, this is my experience of what I've seen. Phase three, when you get the approval for the actual design, that gives you the ability to go out and get an encroachment permit. So the encroachment permit allows the city, yes, you've got approval to move forward. There's this different.
Okay, so the PAED is 3 years. That's going to be estimated to be done in spring of 2017. And so that 3 years just means that then phase three needs to be completed within that 3 years. Once that's completed, you don't care about the PAED anymore because now you're on to phase three.
Correct.
And if that's completed, you're then concerned with the encroachment permit and how long that
yes.
lasts. And what isn't a typical encroachment permit? How long is that good until you have to start asking for extensions?
Really dependent on the project.
Okay.
For instance, with the Topaz Solar Project, mm-hmm. we did a traffic handling because they had big trucks coming along 58, very windy area. And we got a 1 year encroachment permit and then extended it every year for another year. And it was just a non-issue. Mm-hmm. We just had to write in a form.
Okay.
And one thing that I would like to clarify, that three-year extension for phase two that we've spoken of, 3 to 5 years is the probable norm, and that doesn't mean that it's gone. That means that you might have to do some supplemental study update to not start from scratch.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Any other questions? Councilwoman Fonzi.
Mr. Aguilar, I'm sorry to have you get up again. You just sat down.
No problem.
I know that you're with a large company, Wallace Group, is well known throughout the state, and I'm assuming that other cities are running into the same problem, that they had planned on doing some traffic improvements to interchanges and others, and we're running up with this STIP problem where the state is basically stiffing the cities and saying no money. Can you tell us what other cities are doing?
Basically, as you've heard from the presentation, over 80% of California's population is in self-help counties, and that's really the answer. It's by and large, the funding changeover and then the complexity of processing goes up, and those are some of the things that don't come popping out at you right at the very beginning. So what I've seen, and there's an annual conference, I go to it, it's the Self-Help Counties Coalition and Focus on the Future, rightfully named, because really that's where it is, local control for local priorities. And a lot of the cities really have put the state and the federal monies as an add-on rather than the core of what they do for transportation.
You know, I don't mean to preach to the choir, because I'm sure that everybody feels that way, but we pay the most sales tax and property tax probably than any other state in the union. Are these environmental documents for these improvements subject to lawsuit? That we've been through lawsuits with Walmart, and I'd hate to see this delayed or go down because of another lawsuit.
Certainly any environmental document can be sued. And I've had very complicated, complex projects where we had to go through a very long process, just even responding to comments. We were just speaking at break about some of those. This project is very much segregated from the Walmart project, and that's in all of the paperwork and all of the processing. This is about interchange improvements for traffic operational mitigation. It has nothing to do with the land use project that was cleared otherwise. Caltrans is clear on it, we're clear on it, and the environmental document is clear on it, or will be clear on it. So it's not a very complex, complicated project from an environmental, biological error, because it's actually going to have benefits for air quality, greenhouse gas, and all that, so it's got a lot of pluses.
Very good. Thank you, sir. And a question for Mr. DeCarli.
You're welcome.
Yes.
This question involves any bills that may come through the state. That I know that there have been several bills that have gone before this legislature to deal with this. I know there's a frustration, such as bills that might go through at the state level or something else that you may know about.
I think the bills that are all being considered at the state level, we're tracking those bills. We have those in our new staff report that will go out next Friday. And we've done a comparison of the various bills and identified, does that provide any funding relief to this area? And it's pretty nominal. Our best guess projection from what we think the bills will pass is probably $3 million a year. And again, to give you an example, the 101 project in Pismo Beach is a $30 million project. Caltrans doesn't fund them anymore, so we're at $3 million coming from SLOCOG. City of Pismo Beach, Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, we haven't got to the point where we're asking for developer fees for a mainline improvement. Maybe that might be something coming up in the future. It's not going to be something I'm going to advocate. So we'll find out soon in terms of the legislation. The special legislative session that the governor established gives it 1 year's life, and we'll know. On the downside that we're seeing, there was nothing being proposed for transportation improvements, strictly street and road maintenance. You had asked one other question about what other cities are doing. Other cities that are facing the same situation are being forced to increase developer fees, use general funds, use their own sales tax if they have a local option sales tax. And most of those is problematic because in almost every case in our county, they've been moved towards local street and road maintenance. The other ones that are happening, and there's 15 counties like ours that are looking at and investigating this as a, is the public interested or elected officials interested in pursuing a self-help, self-control? Santa Barbara has one. Fresno has one. Kern County does not, and they're looking at it. Monterey, Santa Cruz, our county, Madera County, there's a few other in the valley. But all of them along the coast basically are reevaluating what the opportunities might be.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And this is a question I think that will be for our city engineer, although you may want to pass it off to someone else. Could you explain to me a little bit more about this proposal that could be a public-private partnership to help pay for this?
Well, I think Mr. Pierce mentioned one thing with the earthwork coming from Walmart. I mean, not necessarily, that's not really what I had in mind, but that is one little piece of it that could happen. I know Mr. Pierce's company in the past has built highway.
Typically, a lot of public-private partnerships are like on constructing a road, like a toll road. Okay. That obviously doesn't apply here because you're one access. But that's typically what you're hearing. Could be a toll bridge. That's what you see all over in the Bay Area. The other place for perhaps public-private partnership might be a different aspect. And I'll bring up another one that I did not bring forward, but it made me think about, and that's state-local partnership. A little bit different. State-local partnership was something that was enacted in the 90s, and the state of California provided, I believe, $1 billion. It was a certain amount of money per year, and it went down over the years. But it was matched for those jurisdictions that provided their own funding. It was really an incentive to get self-help counties through, you know, 15, 20 years ago. Some of the legislation that's being proposed right now by CSAC and the League of California Cities includes that provision. It does include a provision for a state-local partnership, and this project with 50% funding would apply. You don't need sales tax per se. It's just matching your local money. It's very difficult for generally counties like ours when you're competing against a project in L.A. where L.A. City has a measure and then L.A. County has a sales tax measure, but most of them would just soon pay for it themselves because they can and they do. But this becomes one of the opportunities. It's something we're looking at.
We welcome.
Good evening. I'm Randy Lawrence. I live up in the area where the project is going to be built. I really appreciate the situation of the city in this situation. I'm in a profession, too, where a lot of times you have to kind of have a crystal ball, and that crystal ball decision is based on a combination of factors, your experience, your knowledge, a little bit of hope, a little bit of luck. But still, it comes down to the fact you have to give it your best hard judgment, and I appreciate a lot of the questions that you've all been asking because I think they're absolutely pertinent. And really, when it all comes down to it, it really does, at least in this situation, come down to the funding. And I just would request that you all, vote with your heads and not just with your hearts. I know how much work you've put into it and how much work everybody's put into it. That's all I would ask. The one other thing, two other requests that I have. Living up in that area, absolutely Ramona out. That mess with that extra one in. So I think the Ramona out would really be the best way. The one other thing I would request is that if you could at least try to address the egress for those of us up in that area, without having the Del Rio on-ramps available. Certainly when they're being worked upon, we're not going to have those available, and we all know that will probably be 18 months at least. And in that period of time, to go further south, and try to get on down to San Anselmo is difficult. It's long. It's kind of it's not an easy way to do it. The most reasonable way is going up Traffic Way as it comes into Santa Cruz, and then you can get on to at San Ramon. A little bit of a difficult on-ramp there heading north, but nevertheless, it's a route that I know a lot of people would probably take. And that stretch of Traffic Way between Obispo Road and Santa Cruz is just horrible. I mean, it's like corduroy. It's all waved and bumped. And if you had to take an outlet to go on Carrizo, it's even worse. So I would really ask that you look at that consideration for those road improvements for those of us who need to try to get out from that direction. Thank you very much.
Well, you can control
the freeways. Changes have been put into place, and that's only from the standpoint of just logically thinking that if the whole complex and the whole is most profitable by having both the marketplace and Walmart, and if you have to have the freeway changes done by the time you have the marketplace, you're going to have to put the marketplace in. Certainly the Madonna Company wants to do that, and I would encourage that. But if you had that freeway interchange closed down with Walmart open, I think it would be a real mess. So I just would encourage to keep moving forward like you're doing. And I also agree with what one of the other gentlemen said. It certainly doesn't seem like you can count on state funds. Who knows? None of us has that crystal ball, but it just seems like the way things are going right now, and certainly, hopefully, environmentally, we'll use less gasoline, and so I don't know where those funds are going to come from unless the state develops other taxes, which hopefully and reasonably they should, because you got to do something about roads. So, but appreciate your work on this.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
For you. Welcome, Ms. Hendy.
Yes, good evening, Mayor and Council Members. Linda Hendy, President of the Atascadero Chamber of Commerce. I'm here this evening to show our support in the Council and City moving forward with the Phase 2 of this proposal, this project. There's several reasons that we are interested in this. The current retail space that is located on that corner, we're concerned about their health of, keeping customers and attracting new customers, and to keep that hope continuing on that corner that we do have forward momentum. And along with that, the Walmart Center, Walmart is coming to town. We know that's a fact, to attract new additional retail and dining opportunities in that corner is very important to this moving forward. And then we are lucky enough to have another developer show interest in fantastic opportunities for growth. And I think one of the long-term goals that I've been hearing and working toward myself and with the chamber was providing additional opportunities for dining and shopping to our community, to our city, which is extremely important because the majority are leaving, which we know are leaving to shop and dine in other cities. Either north or south of us. So there's several reasons that the Chamber of Commerce is definitely in support of moving forward with the Phase 2. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Let's get through any other member of the public wishing to ask a question or make a statement. And then we can go to round two, but let's keep it limited. Welcome, Mr. DeCarli.
It was just one additional clarification I wanted to make and one of the points that I raised. I said this project was achievable, and I wanted to qualify that a little bit. Achievable in terms of overall funding, at a $10 to $12 million project, of which half of it plus is funded, and the other parts is partially. So you're wrestling with, $4 to $5 million, give or take. Our money is kind of questionable right now. But what I'd like to bring up in terms of achievable is when we compare other interchanges, 46 West 101 interchange we're looking at, you saw a copy of the roundabout that was proposed there, that's escalated to $65 million. I don't have any means of funding that project. We're collecting developer fees for that project. We funded one phase already. The roundabouts on the east side requires right-of-way dedications that from very robust businesses, which are very, very difficult. Highway 1-101 in San Luis Obispo has been deemed as a new centralized roundabout or urban interchange or some type of a major modification. Initial estimate we saw was $75 million. That kind of funding isn't there. Briscoe Road interchange is escalating from up to close where the preferred option that was originally proposed is in excess of $23 million. So some of these projects, especially internal projects, are very expensive. And here you have one, you're wrestling with not tens millions or 20 million or 30 million or 50 million, but something is achievable. And that's the point I just wanted to bring. When you're at that range, you are getting that close. So I wanted to give you that perspective, what's achievable.
Thank you. Any member of the public wishing to speak that hasn't shared yet, then I'm going to close public comment. If it turns out that through further discussion someone has just a new thought they absolutely want to share, if you raise your hand. Yeah, we won't. No, it's not a goal. No, it's just that we know we can do it. I would like to have our two engineers here maybe address the issue of that one connection, though I'm going to have you wait because the gentleman that asked the question has got to step out for a moment, and I don't want to have it available for him. So maybe if, Clint, if you could address the other part he raised, and kind of my question really was for you. When I first got elected, Lon Allen called me a cockeyed optimist. I don't think I could do the job I've done in the last number of years if I wasn't optimistic. And I think this project will generate a considerable amount of income, and we will do more analysis related to that. But from your experience and just what you see shaping up, if anything you can shed a light on in terms of what do you see, how this might progress, or the types of businesses you would see coming, the amount of square footage you see, anything you could tell us of what does the future look like to you and your crystal ball?
Well, I can tell you we're in a much different world today than we were even 2 or 3 years ago, let alone back in 09, 010. When it comes to retail and when it comes to commercial leasing and that whole space, it's not like it was in 05, 06 because a lot of things have happened with internet retailing, with the world's changed, but there are a whole host of very viable, relevant, successful retailers that are growing by leaps and bounds. That's just one example of a very successful modern retailer. They get this scavenger hunt. You have to go into the store to search out those things that their whole army of buyers are finding and scouring all over the world to find. Restaurants. Service industry is really growing in open-air shopping centers, which is what we're talking about here. I think that there's going to be, I hate to even say a name because then everybody's going to think that's who's coming. I haven't even talked to them. But a restaurant like BJ's Brewhouse or that type of a of an establishment, like in San Luis drawing, and it also complements well with a trip to Walmart, where you're going and you're getting everything from soup to nuts, and then you come over and it would be nice if we could attract a natural food grocer. I'm working hard at that. That's really going to be hopefully one of our pillars of our of our anchor lineup. So it's going to be community, and it's going to be regional at the same time. In San Luis, we've got Whole Foods, and that's great because they draw people from out of town, but they also provide a level of local shopping that didn't really exist before. New Frontiers did a wonderful job. Love to have New Frontiers, but so that kind of an anchor is who we would be looking for.
Thank you. And yeah, I don't know if our gentleman will rejoin us or not, but for the record, could our engineers respond to Ramon and what might be a possibility? Now, did you have a question?
I just wanted to add a comment to what Clint just said. I had a couple of occasions to go back to the International Conference of Shopping Centers where we went around and talked to some of these restaurant people, some of the people that you kind of mentioned. They all know about Walmart, and they all know about Atascadero, and they're just waiting because that's the location that they want to go to. So I think there'll be a lot of searching to go out and get some, but there's going to be some of them that are going to be waiting at your front door to go into. So it's a very, very important aspect for the future growth up in that area.
So go ahead, our two engineers, if you could add a little bit of thought to that question about Ramon's connection.
Sure. I think there was a two-stage, I guess, question. One that I'll defer to George, and that would be this Ramona inside or Ramona outside. But the other one was when that bridge does close down, because during construction, you know, to make it affordable, to make it, you cannot keep this bridge open. I mean, it's going to be really impossible to do that. So this interchange will go out of commission, partially or in full. So I didn't catch it. It was traffic way between, does anybody recall?
Santa Cruz and Obispo.
Santa Cruz and Obispo. So you mentioned that it was, I think you said corduroy, which was a new term for me, describing a road surface, but I understand what he's talking about. I don't know if that's on necessarily our CIP, but, you know, that's something we'd want to look at. I mean, we're still looking out, you know, another 2.5-3 years, let's say, or maybe even a little longer before we do that. But obviously, you know, we'll want to set up some detours, defined detours that people are going to have to take when this bridge is down. And at that time, we'll look at those roads. We'll just have to evaluate that, I guess, when we get to that point and get those detours established. George, do you want to take the Ramona insider out?
Certainly. Thank you. Regarding the alternatives and the criteria, I can't give an answer.
So we always require answers. As soon as you said, I can't give an answer, just shut off. So, all right. Our police chief is versatile.
Very nice. The alternatives as they're laid out right now. For instance, with Ramona out, at this point, you draw closer to the neighborhood, and there are elevation changes there. So there are potential noise and visual issues that you need to consider, and that'll be part of the environment. We got a little pointer on here. No? Okay. That's all right. So you got just a short distance there. And so if you were stacking folks there and you had more than a couple of vehicles wanting to stack up there, particularly like say Sunday mornings, then you've just jammed up that roundabout. So there are problems with that thing. Typically the traffic draw is at an off peak for other things. So the analysis will continue. We'll take a look at that. But on the positive side of it is Ramona is a third-tier roadway. So 101 is the first tier, the principal arterial. And then you have Del Rio, which is, the second tier, which is an arterial throughout the city. And then you've got a third tier, which is more of a collector road. The principles of traffic say that you don't want to have all three tiers in one intersection, because you're giving just as much importance to the lower level tiers as you are to the primary tiers. So from that perspective, the other alternative where it has Ramona in the roundabout, you don't have these issues of stacking, because they go right in. They don't stack up and then potentially stop the roundabout. And there are design exceptions that Caltrans is going to be looking at when you're talking about the distance separating a local roadway intersection from their ramp intersections. The limited space violates some of those design exceptions if you take Ramona out. So then you're going to be pursuing another type of design exception that you may not be able to quit right now, but I can outline some of the issues.
Thank you. That's the type of thing that'll be thoroughly studied through this process we're going through.
Exactly so. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, I think we have closed public comment, but is there anyone in the public that did have something else they wanted to say before we go to council? I don't see anyone rushing forward, so I'm going to bring it back. And again, I'm going to go just for final comments, and I'm going to go left, right again. So Councilman Kelly, then Councilman Sturtevant, Councilman Moreno, Councilman Fonzie. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Tom. I think there was a very good presentation that was put on this evening by everyone. I think almost all of the answers, all the questions got answered in order to go into the next phase that we're talking about tonight. The money is in the TIF funds to be used for this, so there's no additional funding or reserve spending or anything like that. I think it's just part of the process to keep going forward. I believe this process said you take a year and a half or something like that. And when we get to the next point, I think we'll have a very good idea of where the funding availability is and if there's been any changes, plus the fact that we have a year and a half to actually work on it and maybe put some programs together. I think it's just of the income. We do have to use some city monies. Will be paid back in a relatively short period of time, which justifies the expense if there is one to the city. Because if we go ahead with this project and we complete it, I mean, we're looking 25, 30, 40 years of an investment into the city. The other aspect is you have the property across the street, which once you get this in, somebody's going to jump on that, and we're going to have a hub of the shopping centers for the North County. So I think it's a difficult decision to make, looking at all the numbers and everything. But on the other hand, it's a very easy decision to make because of the future for Atascadero.
Thank you. Councilman Sturtevant.
Thank you. Yes, I see this as an investment in future development for our city. I really appreciate Mr. DeCarli's perspective on the finances. I can't tell you, this last year, all the talk of this and how much how the escalation from 4 to 12 and everything else, but actually, you know, sometimes you step back and you look at it with a perspective from reality. It really makes you look at it differently, and I appreciate that. There has been a lot of hard work on in this, all the work by the Wallace Group that's been going in parallel, which has gotten us to this point where we are right now, and the partnership with Mr. Pierce and his group and just the willingness to work with the city. This is it's going to be a good project once this with this build out, and I do want to invest in our future. I do want to invest in our businesses and our economic development. So thank you for all the good information. I really appreciate this opportunity to really go over and vet all this out, and so we can make a decision on this issue. Thank you.
Councilwoman Moreno.
Nick, I want to say that, you know, just having gotten here in December, you've really jumped into this and you have a real thorough understanding of how this is going, and so thank you for all the work you've done to get involved in this and to bring all this forward. Jorge and Ron, thank you for being here and answering all the questions. It really is an investment in our future, and I liked your term, Mr. Pierce, a cooperative stakeholder, I think, and so I'm very glad to be working with you in that respect, and thank you for investing in Atascadero. I think it is important for us to move forward. We have the money in the TIF. We have the TIF money to move forward with this. I think it's wise to do so. We have a budget that looks reasonable with some good contingencies in there. And I think we've got to take these steps to know what is the next step, what is the next phase, and if you just stop it now, everything's dead in the water, and I think we go backwards in a significant way. So I'm ready to move forward.
Thank you. Councilwoman Fonzie.
Thank you. The role of a city council is always to look forward, that we approve general plans, we approve climate action plans, we talk about road plans, we look at the future of where we want our city to go. And we've decided, because we see a need, that people are leaving the city to eat, to spend money, they're not staying within those city boundaries. And so one of the thoughts that we had and a plan that we had was to make a shopping center area at Del Rio, including a Walmart. I think to achieve our goals, we need to go forward. We need to look to the long term. Yes, there will be momentary pain, but there will be long-term gain. As Mr. Pierce said, every day is a delay, and it's a day without stores. We need those stores. I'm prepared to vote for this.
Thank you. Well, shoot. I'll go ahead and move staff's recommendation with a special thank you to Mr. Pierce.
I'll second.
Roll call, please.
And this vote is on both items under consent?
Yes.
Okay. Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you, and thank you all for your contributions. Next item is council announcements and reports. I'm sure they'll be brief this evening, but again, I'm just going to go from my left to my right, and let's go ahead and merge, though I don't usually like to do it. Let's do council announcements and any committee reports that you may want to share. And I'm just going to begin with Councilman Kelly.
Yes. Thank you, Tom. Yes, Luke, if you could bring that picture back of myself with the Eagle Scout. Last Saturday, I was honored to represent the city and the city council in recognizing Jazz Zuniga as earning his Eagle Scout Award in the Boy Scouts. It was really quite an achievement. I guess you need to obtain 13 of these little badges that you see on his banner there. And this gentleman, I believe, had done 36 or 37, had been working on it for years. And it's really nice that we were able to represent somebody like that in our community, because as we all know, there's several people who have been very, very successful in life who, a lot of them are Eagle Scouts. And I think it's really a good program that we have in our city, and I was very honored to represent the city council in recognizing this gentleman. So thank you for the opportunity to do that. On the other hand, last week I attended the Homeless Services Oversight Committee, which is also called HSOC. 2 years ago, they did an enumeration where they go around and count the homeless people in the county. This year, they call it the point in time count. And in 2013, they had a number of 2,186. This year, they came up with 1,515, of which nobody could understand how they came to such a low number. A lot of people had a lot of different excuses. The lady from the county said, oh no, we've had an increase on the number of homeless people. So somewhere along the line, I think Sue was there, this is supposed to get a little asterisk, because all of the funding and everything that we receive throughout the county for the homeless and what have you is predicated on this number here. There will be a full report that comes out that I think breaks it down to communities and what have you. That was supposed to have been completed yesterday. I was trying to get a copy of it for this evening, and I haven't received it yet. So those are some very interesting numbers, and there was also a presentation putting on of trying to fast-track the housing for the veterans in the county, that the money is available, and the presentation was great. All we have to do is make it work. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Moreno.
Yes, a couple of things. One, the Chamber had its annual business expo last Thursday, Peace, Love, and Expo. They did a fantastic job. So many businesses participating, so much fun. And I wanted to thank city staff. I know Terry's not here right now, But she, Terry Banish, our deputy city manager, had a booth for the city, and she was all decked out in her Peace, Love, and Expo. And then we had Office of Economic Development, and Alfredo was there sharing a booth with Joseph from Jobella. And it was really great to have the city involved, staff involved. I saw people asking questions, and it was good to be out there. So thank you to you, and thank you to the chamber for doing such a great job. I also wanted to commend RISE had their big event a week and a half ago, Wine, Women, and Shoes. They had over 200 attendees and 75 volunteers. And so I know Brian and I were two of those volunteers. Brian was one of the soul men. The soul men were walking around and serving people, and it was quite an event. And I know that Jennifer Adams will be here at a future meeting to share a little bit more. But they had a celebrity auctioneer, Johan Graham from Storage Wars, that raised $15,000 for the Fund in Need, which is a playground for the Atascadero shelter. So they did a great job, and I was happy to be a part of that. With regards to committees, let's see, TBID last week, we'll be having our strategic planning this Friday, and they're really anxious to get going, and we'll be working on that Friday. Anyone from the public is more than welcome to come. I have EVC tomorrow, and I think that's it for the moment.
Thank you. Let's go ahead with, we'll go to, I'll keep my routine here. Councilman Sturtevant.
Yes, yeah, I like the left-right thing. You threw me off when you had Heather just do that.
So. Yeah, well, you know.
Well, anyway, yes, I had the opportunity to serve as a soul man for the Wine, Women, and Shoes benefit for RISE. It was a wonderful experience. I learned a lot about shoes. I even actually sold a couple of pairs, so it was very cool. But it was a great cause. It just had a great time. I'm really looking forward to it next year to be able to do that again. So. Council reports, the League of California Cities has their annual conference September 30th through October 2nd. So Mayor O'Malley and Councilman Moreno, myself, and City Manager, and I believe the City Clerk will be attending. So if there's any information from there, we will make sure that we inform you when we return. Thank you.
I just wanted to comment and give a kudo to staff regarding the September 11th program that we had with the lighting of the building. I found it very moving. I thought it was appropriate for the day. It was a solemn day, a day that we all remember in different ways. We were different places, but it was a life-changing experience in many ways. And I just thought it was well done, and I hope we can do it again next year. In terms of council appointments, all of mine are meetings that are coming up. I have Air Pollution Control District tomorrow. I have Design Review tomorrow. We have Oversight Board Thursday, Water Issues Liaison Thursday. So I can tell you about LAFCO. I'm sure you've already heard on the news that the LAFCO met and talked about the Paso Robles Groundwater Basin District. It was approved by the board. 6-1, I was the sole opposing vote. And I'd be happy to tell you about it if you want me to. I'll tell you now, but it'll take a tiny bit of time. So I'll take a nod or a... Okay, I'll go ahead and tell you why I voted no. I felt that the funding on this was not accurately produced, and it did not reflect the cost of the district. It was $950 million for operating costs for the first 5 years, and that was just to put together a groundwater sustainability plan. Didn't talk about any type of legal action. You know, when you have water, you're going to have lawsuits. There was no contingency for any type of legal fees and also any contingencies for implementing that plan. So I thought it was totally unrealistic. It was a way to get this vote to go through and get approval without really reflecting the true costs of what this district will cost. The other problem that I had with that district was that 90% of the groundwater is used by irrigated ag, the vineyards in particular. So it was my feeling that 90% of the cost should be borne by the irrigated ag, and they were not bearing their share of the burden. It was 77% with the small homeowners paying the rest. So difficult decision. It will go to the vote. The vote is always good. So I didn't oppose the vote, but I just felt that it could have been done better. That's it.
Thank you. I'm going to defer on most of the committees I'm involved with, and much you heard about tonight, having reviewed with San Luis Council of Governments. That's a lot of work going on at that level. I did want to ask our city manager if you would give a little bit of an overview for folks at home. What's going on Friday? I'm very excited about meeting again with a joint meeting, really, with the TBID, the Tourism Business Improvement District, with council and the chamber and community to follow up where we left off with the Coraggio group. We've really given some thought on a vision and a marketing plan for our community. But tell us a little bit about that and where we're going from here, what we're going to accomplish on Friday.
Absolutely. You actually summed it up very well. On Friday, we'll have a strategic planning session right here in the City Council chambers. We're going to start at 9 a.m. and go about till noon to 2 p.m., depending on how we're doing. And this is really a carryover of all the work that you guys have been doing throughout the year. Our strategic planning session that occurred last August of 2014 carried over into a joint session with the TBID in 2015. And a follow-up in 2015, and you've been working on promotions and branding and really trying to develop a vision of what it is the city of Atascadero has to offer, not only visitors from the outside, but our citizens and the community and the county and residents right here. Really that come, stay, and spend, or stay and spend and enjoy types of things. So this is a continuation of that. We'll be looking further at logos. We've been trying to develop a logo that we really feel reflects the brand of who we are and where we're going and what we really want to be. So we're doing some further work on that. We'll be working on the marketing plan. So we now have the deputy city manager that's been in charge of the promotions and special events and doing such a fantastic job with that, has developed a draft marketing plan, and then also be evaluating some of those decisions that go with marketing and promotions. So we'll be wrapping all that up on Friday, and then eventually those decisions will be brought before a televised council meeting for final approval.
Thank you. And I will just touch briefly on our city schools committee. It's not one we talk a lot about, but we do have a committee that's made up of two council members and two members of the school board. And we talk about issues that relate to our community and the school combined, and really all the councils involved in youth activities. But I think it's getting to be more important. I've made sure that we're going to always have two members at this meeting because we want to be involved. The school, with their new superintendent, has really identified being involved in the community as a real priority. And so I think we want to continue our commitment in working with the schools in so many ways. Unfortunately, we've had to work in some tough ways with our involvement on some of the incidents at the school. We've had two incidents not that far apart where we've had to have police involvement with some real threat to our youth. And I think I do want to just commend our police department. Very good response on this and really needing to coordinate a multi-agency response. Not a lot of stuff we can talk about because there's a lot of investigation still going on, but safety in all cases is our council's top priority, and certainly with our youth community. But in addition to that, there's so many things we can be doing together. One area I want to particularly work on this next year is taking another look at a bicycle plan, which is really going to be citywide. We've looked at this before. It positions us for funding, and it also integrates with a lot of priorities that we do hope to keep moving forward on. We've always had a bike month event for a number of years, and recently we've partnered with Mayor Martin, and I have kind of worked jointly with newly forming bicycle club in Atascadero, and also there's a strong one in Paso. I think we can really step that up in terms of involvement, and part of what we will be talking about our next city schools committee is there's a number of folks at the school that would like to be involved, some teachers and some youth representatives. So I think that's another area where we can really work together with our school. And with that, I'll see if any staff would like to add any last comments before we adjourn. Well, then we are adjourned. Thank you.
The special
special meeting of the City of Atascadero City Council in the capacity of the successor agency to the Community Redevelopment Agency of Atascadero for redevelopment and housing purposes. Call to order. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie. Yes. Councilmember Kelly.
Here.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno.
Yes, here.
Mayor O'Malley.
Here.
All present.
I know it's awkward. Tom's asked me to do this, but he still goes last.
I know. Sorry.
I saw the catch. Do I have a motion for approval of the agenda?
So moved. Second.
First by Councilmember Fonzie, second by Councilmember Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie.
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno.
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley.
Yes.
5-0 motion passes.
All right, we have the consent calendar, which are just minutes for the last meeting in May. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Councilmember Fonzie, second by Councilmember Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0 motion passes.
Now is the time for community forum. This is reserved for anyone who would like to address the council on something not on the agenda, but that is within our jurisdiction. If there's anyone who would like to speak, please come to the podium. Seeing none, we'll close public comment, and we will move to the public hearings, which are none. We won't be moving to those public hearings. Management reports, approval of the ROPS schedule. Is that you, Jerry?
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. With your permission, I'll go through this briefly tonight. This is the ROPS. We do this every 6 months, as you'll recall. So I will move pretty briefly through this. If you have any questions, please let me know. So basically, this is the ROPS for the next, the required obligation payment schedule for the former redevelopment agency that lists all of the required payments that we need to make on behalf of the former agency as the successor agency for the period of January through June of 2016. So this will come before you tonight. As Councilwoman Fonzie mentioned in the last meeting, there is a meeting on Thursday, and so that will go to the Oversight Board on Thursday for review, and then it will go to the Department of Finance. So essentially, this is a six-month period. 1516B is the ROPS name because it does cover the second half of the 1516 fiscal year. Approximately $1 million and some change of the Redevelopment Property Tax Trust Fund will be requested in this. This is funding that comes through property taxes that will primarily go to for the bond debt service, and then a portion of that will also come back to the city as an administrative allowance to cover costs like this. As I said before, this will go before the Oversight Board on Thursday in 2 more days, and then it will be sent to the Department of Finance for approval and to the county. If there's any questions, I'll be happy to entertain them.
Thank you, Director. Are there any questions of staff from the City Council? All right, I will now open public comment. Is there any member of the public wishing to speak on this item? Seeing none, we'll close public comment. Are there any council comments or a motion?
Move approval.
Actually, I'm sorry. I did have one other comment. There was a couple of items that we needed to include in addition that didn't get included on the version that went to you in your council packet. Okay. These are items that are not, they don't have any effect on the funding or the dates or anything like that, but they needed to be included as just kind of process-wise. So I would direct your attention to page 10. There's a couple of items, the administrative cost allowance in column I. There are two number totals that we will be adding. Again, it doesn't affect the totals that we're requesting. That number in the administrative allowance is $1,825,000 that we've added in column I. And then under the Historic City Hall repair and rehab project, $150,000, and then we added a couple of dates in D and E on that last item, the former chamber building.
Jerry, you said this is page 10. You mean 10 of 18?
10 in your staff report.
Okay, so it's just that very long one row there.
Yes.
Okay.
So I apologize for the oversight there. Again, it won't affect any of the funding numbers or anything. It's just a format process.
Okay. Any questions? All right, anything else? Okay. Bring it back again for questions or a motion.
Move approval as amended.
Second.
Approval by Mayor O'Malley, second by Councilmember Sturtevant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturtevant?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Do we have any board announcements and reports? All right, we are adjourned.